And greetings, Earth explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight, or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. May 11th, the Schwassmann-Bachmann comet's pieces passed in front of the Ring Nebula in the Lyra system. The main pieces missed Earth by 19 lunar distances. That's about 5.5 million miles. But the space junk, too small to see with a telescope, will be reaching the atmosphere in about 2 days. If you have clear night skies, you should be able to see it. We really don't know how many incidents will occur per hour. This one is new. If you see anything really stupendous in the way of meteor showers, write me an email and tell me about it. If you have any original pictures, send them along and we'll post them for the world to see. The solar wind tonight is a mild 478 kilometers per second. Sunspot 880 just dissolved away. So right now the sun is completely blank of spots. Solar scientists would have you believe that we are at an extremely low risk for flares or prominences, but the gravitational waves arriving from the galaxy's center will soon change that. Within 12 months, the solar activity may change dramatically. I would be prepared for cosmic radiation, like the world has not seen for over 25,000 years. Also, there is a brand new volcanic eruption in the news. Imagine that. Mount Merapi is in Indonesia and has been dormant for quite a while, but now it is erupting, causing the evacuation of over 20,000 people in a panic. We hope it doesn't explode like Mount St. Helens and really do some damage, but it is rumbling very seriously. We'll keep you posted on how it affects the globe. Next week on X Squared Radio, our guest is Sandy Andrew. He is the author of the new book, Your Never-Ending Life. This is book one of the Universal Learning series published by Bridgeway Books. We will be discussing the eternal nature of the human soul in a way you might not expect. You can pick up this book in the online store at X Squared Radio. And you can listen to the interview next Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern, right here on X Squared Radio. Remember, if it's not mainstream, it's on BBS Radio Network. We have been doing some really neat changes to the website at X Squared Radio. You should be able to more easily access the archives and shop for very cool stuff and leave us some notes. We answer every single email, so feel free to write us anytime. If you want to stay current on our programs, guests, books, CDs, DVDs, and other outstanding stuff for your space, you can make X Squared Radio your favorite place on the web. Just go to x2-radio.com and make it one of your favorites. We also want to welcome our AM affiliates and your many requests that this program be placed onto XM and Sirius. I believe everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so your efforts are paying off. They're having their effect, and I appreciate it. Tonight on X Squared Radio, our guest is Ken Parson. This we are very excited to have Ken on the program. I'm sure you have heard him reveal the most amazing biblical evidences. Well, tonight we are going to start out with evidences of past super civilizations on planet Earth, like was Adam the first man on the Earth? What is it that the ancient writings say about the origin of man, his relationship to the stars, and his possible destiny? You always wanted to know, and now you're here. So you may have read far and wide to find the answers. Well, Ken is one of the world's most eloquent and documented students and teacher of Plain and Simple Truth found right smack in the middle of the same scriptures you may have so casually dismissed many times. If you explore outside the canon of scripture, that's great. If you only explore inside the canon of the Holy Bible, that's even better, because you are about to learn something new from the old writings. Please welcome with me Ken Parson. Good evening, Ken. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, this is my pleasure, for sure. I've thought about this interview for weeks, and we only have 3 hours to affect the universe here on X Squared Radio, but I think we can do it. Now, I am a student of the Bible. I'm sure lots of people out there are. When I read it, I find all kinds of things that the major religions just steer clear of. I think maybe the confusion starts right away in the very first few pages. Genesis talks about creation of planets and animals and races of men, but as an anthropological record, it's kind of weak. It just leaves a lot of details out. So I guess where I'd like to start with this interview is for you to tell us about, maybe brief us, begin the story, on were there races before Adam on the earth?
The scripture is really quite clear on that. One of the things that we have to invest attention in, and again, we should really not spend our time when we're reading the Bible, but invest our time. Expect to get a return out of what you're reading. One of the things to remember about the Bible is there are some keys is when we look at this. The Bible is many different things. It acts on many different levels. It acts in many different dimensions. As the Bible codes themselves will reveal an entirely different dimension of study in the Scripture. But just surface layer, when we actually read it, what we see is, just to give an idea, if I read a biography, say, of Harry Truman, I would have a very thick book. And yet this book supposedly encompasses the man's entire life from beginning to finish. However, if the book actually did record everything about Truman's life, then it would take a similar period of time to read the book as when he lived. So we know that it only is addressing those things which seem pertinent to the reader.
I see.
And not just all of the details. And that's what we have with the Scripture. I mean, it's a book that can be read if you go with a particular structure. You could read it in a year. I mean, you could read it in less time than that. But many people have it plotted out so that they can read it fully through in the entire year. Yet, it encompasses millions, perhaps billions of years' worth of time. It tells us many things that when we really look at it, we can see those things. Matter of fact, the Scofield Reference Bible, it was one of the first Bibles that I had as a young child, and it made a comment in the beginning of the book of Revelation that I found powerful, and they stated that they were going to do the best they could to interpret the book of Revelation, but that those interpretations would be relatively obscure, and that they would make much more sense to the generation for which they were meant. In other words, when that generation got here, there would be things that they would see in it that previous generations just simply could not see. One of those things is a description that we see now in Revelation of the Internet. That's something that before 1995, I mean, the Internet was here much longer than that. I think it was 1965, perhaps, that it was literally invented by the government, however, the Pentagon, but it was only really turned over to public use, general population, in 1995. So as far as most people understanding what the Internet was and using the Internet and it being a part of our daily lives, it would only have been really obvious that we were seeing a description of that in Revelation to this generation. Generations before that couldn't have seen it. However, there's many examples of that. But when we look at Scripture, one of the things that so many people find confusing is that so many claim that this earth is only 6,000 years old. Period. End of conversation.
Right.
When the Bible does not say that. Now, where they get it is from taking the, you know, different, like Adam lived for so long, and then his kids lived for so long, and they go through and just sort of add up the ages of everybody in the Bible and come up with this timeline. But the Bible is very clear. Between verses 1 and verse 2, it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. But in verse 2, it says, now the earth is formless and void. In other words, the earth is already here. So what we're seeing in what most people call the creation event is a recreation event. It's a reinstituting of those things. And that's what we have to understand. The word let, when he says, let there be light, let is a word of permission. It's not a word of creation. You know, my kids, when they want to go do something on a Friday night, I let them.
Yeah.
So he's actually referring to, you know, in the first verses, it tells us very clearly that the earth was here, that it was a dark place, and that there was water. Word for word, it says, now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters.
Right.
So everything was already here. The universe had already been created. And we also see that once he creates mankind, or Adam, and we see Adam and Eve, which literally until what we call the fall, or Adam committing high treason against God, the creator of the universe, the ruler of the theocracy, then at that point, then we see Eve referred to as Eve. But before that, God it says in chapter 5 that he called their name Adam. So there is mankind was created really in a different state at that point. And you know, there could have been any period of time that we read here when he's reinstituting things on the planet from that time until what we would call a fallen state. But he uses the words when he says to replenish the earth, which is King James Version, replenish, he's actually saying to repopulate.
Yeah, I've always found that word kind of interesting, that the commandment that he gives Adam, or gives man and woman that's created in his image, really no mention of Adam yet, he gives them a commandment, you know, multiply and replenish the earth. Not be the first life on this earth. He's saying replenish the earth.
That's right. And you know, when you look at the Hebrew text, it is the identical command given to Noah and his family as they come off the ark. They're told the exact same thing.
So the earth,
to be fruitful, to multiply, and to replenish.
So, now prior to Adam, prior to the Garden of Eden being set up, we notice, at least in Genesis, there seems to be another creation. There seems to be another organizing of human type of life on the earth, created in God's image. And is there evidence that that race was here before Adam and Eve?
There was a population. There were inhabitants of the planet Earth before what we see as the recreation or the reinstituting of Earth itself.
Well, how were those individuals placed here? I mean, we know Adam and Eve ostensibly don't have a belly button. But how were the... that's a comical way of saying, gee, they weren't born of anything mortal. They were
right.
They were genetically engineered beings. And we'll cover that later. But the race of man that was here, the population that was here on the earth, were they Neanderthals? Were they...
Well, that's the thing. Were they men? At this point, we're really looking at something that is obscure. We know
right.
It was here. Now, what it was, who those inhabitants were, that is what is still a question. And one of the things that we have to remember is that there are many races. In other words, the human race is one race, mankind. There
right.
really is not different races.
Right.
It says in the book of Acts that we were all one blood. We all come from a single line, so we're one race of people. However, there's an angelic race, and we know that there are other races, yet they operate in an extra-dimensional capacity. And there are other dimensions. I mean, we know that. We can evidence that with mathematics. We also know when we start looking at dark energy and dark matter that really what we see, I think I've always just kind of gone with a rough 10%, but I think we were talking the other day and you had used even a percentage Less than that.
Yeah, it's actually, in the physics community, we've kind of settled on around 6% of the mass of the universe is actually visible.
That's right. So 94% is what we can't see. Now, in Scripture, the Bible says clearly that it's the invisible things that are eternal. It's those things that we see that are temporary.
Right.
So we're really only seeing a small part of what's actually happening. And that therein lies the rub. That's what we have to remember, is not everything is as it appears to us. So what we're really seeing, is when we talk about the fall, what we really are seeing is a limitation of our dimensional capacity. In other words, let's just say we operate in four dimensions, three spatial dimensions and one dimension of time.
Right.
Height, width, and depth for the spatial dimensions. So just for the sake of discussing it, if a entity or a person was only two-dimensional, height and width, well, they would understand height and width all day long. But they wouldn't have a concept of depth, because those two dimensions do not contain that third dimension. However, a three-dimensional person that actually contained depth would have an understanding of height and width. So he could actually operate in both of those realms, and then, of course, when we throw in the time dimension, that changes things, too, again, dramatically. So in essence, what we look at is an angelic race, or races that are capable of operating in extra dimensions, or in this other 96%, they can operate also in our dimensions, and they can comprehend our dimension because, for instance, if they're fifth-dimensional beings, then they have a concept of the four dimensions that we operate in, plus their own this other dimension. So if they're sixth or seventh or eighth, and I think some, is it not math that says there's up to 10 different dimensions that we know of. In other words, if we were two-dimensional persons, theoretically, like we were just talking about, mathematically, a two-dimensional person could prove the existence of that third dimension, even though they wouldn't be able to see it or comprehend it. They would still know it's there. And we're the same way. We know the other dimensions are there. We can't see them. I have an article from space.com where the scientist had actually made the comment. And he said, you know, really embarrassing thing as a scientist to say that, you know, 96% of the universe is there. We just can't find it. or 94, or whatever that particular article, you know, had put it at. So there's so much that we don't understand. I mean, we've come so far, yet we still have so much further to go in understanding as far as what's out there.
Well, I mathematically, I guess when we talk about two dimensions, it would be sort of like us existing on a sheet of paper, which is a two-dimensional, you know, flat plane, and then someone coming along and placing an orange on the paper. The only thing that we could comprehend as paper beings is the dot, the point at which the orange touches the paper. But we don't have the capability of crawling off the paper and getting onto the orange and actually comprehending its roundness and its sphericalness. But that's a little bit what we're talking about. As three-dimensional beings, we think we know it all, as did the clergy when they approached, you know, Galileo Galilei, and he said, hey, look through my telescope and you'll see that the Earth actually revolves around the sun. And they refused to look. They just would not step off the paper and become a three-dimensional being. So that's a little bit where we're at right now. But when we talk about these races that existed before Adam, how did they get here? I mean, did they crawl forth from the primordial ooze, or did they, you know, were they brought here in a silver ship?
Well, my perception is it was God. Obviously, you know, the same creator that we attribute everything to now, you know, science even says that there was an action that caused everything. It refers to it as the causer, whereas what we see the causer as being is literally God. I mean, we're the intelligent design of an infinitely intelligent creator. That's why it's in our human nature. It's almost like a person who says, you know, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God, but you throw them out of an airplane, and they scream for God all the way down. It's something that is innate. You know, there's a part of us that understands that. However, we do know that at some point that there was, let's just for a moment, go back further, like what we were talking about, past Adam, back into the dateless past, while this Earth was probably in this other state. You know, we see the in Job, it talks about Lucifer and him walking among the fiery stones. And that word in Hebrew is eban, which is a built stone. And literally, if we were, you know, we saw, you know, like looking at Earth from Mars, Earth is a star. So, you know, the planets being the fiery stones, it literally, what I see, is that these angels have the capacity of going from planet to planet, of working in these other areas. So it very well could have been an angelic race. I know that some believe that perhaps it was, you know, Lucifer wasn't always an evil entity.
No.
He was a very high-ranking angel.
Yeah, he was the light bringer.
Exactly. And we know that at some point he decided that he wanted to have part of that glory that God had. And and there is where we see the actual fall itself, or the rebellion. Mm-hmm. And God didn't just immediately, you know, the moment that Lucifer at that time, now Satan, which is his new name, he actually recruited one-third of the angelic race. So there is a rebellion that was going on. God didn't immediately respond at the moment that this iniquity was found in him. He actually let this thing, the scenario, play itself out. He let him go to the angels. And so those angels that would exercise their free will, and that's really what this whole thing is about. Angels, I've heard it said that angels don't have free will. Well, that's not accurate. They do have the capacity for free will, but they're not allowed to use it.
Right.
That's not what they were created for. So when Lucifer chose to use his free will, that was the beginning of the end for him. And so God let him recruit as many of the angels as he possibly could. But at that point was when they were cast out or cast down and perhaps, again, just lost a lot of their dimensional qualities, lost their liberty to move freely among different dimensions. So when we look at the universe now from our eyes, again, there's a lot of it that we can't see, but again, we know it's there. We also see that there was, in Job, which is the oldest book in the Bible, it refers to a place called Rahab.
Mm-hmm.
And this place called Rahab, he referred to Egypt later on as being like Rahab. But Rahab was an actual place that we see in Job, and it is actually spoken in reference to, it's almost spoken of in relation to Lucifer himself. But it makes the comments that the heavens were actually, well, it said the pillars of the heavens quake, aghast at his rebuke by his power, he churned up the sea by his wisdom, he cut Rahab to pieces. By his breath the skies became fair, his hand pierced the gliding serpent, and these are but the outer fringe of his works.
Mm-hmm.
And we see where the asteroid belt is now, between Mars and Jupiter. It actually holds an orbit. And it's as though that this planet Rahab, in this when Lucifer was walking among the fiery stones, or perhaps even in our solar system, that at the time of this fall, or the rebellion itself, that God, in his rebuke, destroyed the headquarters of Lucifer. And these pieces blew into the planet Earth and also Mars and destroyed it. Again, you know, we have to get a grasp on, we are so limited in our thinking. But when we consider, you know, what it could have been a trillion years ago, you know, it's no real mystery. I mean, it's why we look at Mars. It's why we're so, drawn to it. You know, we see where it looks like there's water on Mars. And, you know, at one point we saw the face on Mars. And we went back and looked again, and it didn't look so much like a face anymore. One of the things to remember is the surface of Mars is so turbulent. I mean, it's always shifting and turning with the types of storms that they have. Rarely does an area look exactly the same as it did the last time, you know, we went and looked at it. But we've seen, certainly in the Sidonia region, which looks as though it could have actually had structures there
time. Yeah, it does appear from a distance. Now, we've got a new probe up there. The probe that was sent will get 64 miles off the surface, which is about as close as we've ever been, and the optics that are on this thing are huge, just incredibly crisp and clear, and hopefully they'll get low enough over that area that we'll be able to get some great photos back. And now, you did say that Rahab was actually not on Earth, that it was a planet in orbit around the sun, and you implied that that planet may have been shattered or destroyed by something or somebody that came into the solar system, and that the asteroids that are in the belt in that orbit are the remnants of that planet.
That's correct.
And maybe whatever was sent through the solar system that shattered Rahab, and I think I've heard it called other names too, maybe Tiamat, the ancient Babylonian cylinders have a tenth planet or an 11th planet, they called it, stuck there in that orbit. The planet that bumped into it or destroyed it, I've heard people call it Marduk and other things, maybe those pieces came to Earth, and that was kind of the twisting serpent that man saw in the sky as it was heading for Earth. And you're saying that it collided with Earth and it collided with Mars. That would have been quite cataclysmic, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. And that's exactly the state of the Earth that we see when we first hit Genesis going in. We see the Earth in an absolutely catastrophic state. Mm. I mean, when it's absolutely dark, you know, it had to be frozen. You know, so we're seeing everything in Scripture, what we see evidences of just in science. In other words, if there was no sun shining, this Earth would have been frozen. We even see in Job another reference to when the Earth was frozen into a ball of ice.
Right.
So, you know, it's no secret that at one point this planet was just like ice because
yeah.
it was blocked off from the sun as a result of this catastrophe.
Because we would have had a collapsed sky condition where there would have been so much junk in the atmosphere that it blocked the sunlight, and the mean temperature of the Earth cooled off 3 or maybe 4 degrees, which is enough to just cover two-thirds of the planet with a sheet of ice.
Correct. And that's why when God says, "Let there be light," He actually, what we're saying in the literal translation, we'll see it put this way, "Let light be." In other words, the sun is already there.
Mm-hmm.
But what He does is He literally moves whatever is blocking the sun away and lets sunlight once again hit the planet. And that's what we begin to see, because, you know, later it says that He makes the sun again shine. And so, you know, it's making references to the sun and the moon later, you know, putting them in the expanse of the sky. But early here we see let there be light. So this is, again, another evidence that what we're seeing is Earth literally being reconstructed or reinstated. It's being put together to create an environment for mankind, which He is getting ready to create as the new inhabitant. But this time, this race of people that He was creating, not only were they going to be us, be in possession of the ability to have free will, and not only was He going to let us use it, but He was fully expecting us to use it. That was what made mankind so different from these other races, is that we actually, it's almost as though He was replicating Himself.
Oh, I understand. So, now, prior to this cataclysm, then, there were human or humanoids on this planet, and so they would have been just pretty much wiped out with this kind of cataclysm, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's why we find that that's really where, you know, when we see so many people talking about evolution, you know, it's based on us finding, you know, weird skeletons, weird skulls, fossils and things of this nature. But, you know, we're constantly finding out that when we think we understand the full picture, we don't. You know, back in August 10th of 2001, you know, all of a sudden they found some new evidence. The headline said plants older than once thought, the study says. Then they found some bones that were actually in Ethiopia. And all of a sudden, it says old bones challenge evolutionary theory, you know, based on the dating of the bones. But the reality is, when you look at the period of time that we've been here and the different races or the different inhabitants that have been here on this planet and the different types of animals that must have been here, and God creates some very amazing things. Again, we really can't be limited. When we look at we have to remember, a third of the angels had broke away. But if there were an angelic race that had actually been here, we also see in Genesis 6, we see that at one point what it calls the sons of God, or those angels, which were part of the rebellion, actually came down to the planet Earth and pretended to be gods.
Yes, they did. And from the evidence, it shows that they actually physically interacted with mortal women and had children.
Exactly. And they were considered the heroes of renown. In other words, there was great stories that were told about them. When we look at mythology, Greek mythology, and things of this nature, we see really it's an exaggeration of the truth. I mean, there is some substance.
Well, Hercules may have actually been, you know, a superhuman.
Well, and exactly. And notice, too, that his mother was human, but his father was one of these, quote-unquote, gods.
Right.
People that had come from the skies. And when we look at a lot of the old, you know, Egyptian art and things of this nature, and we see combinations of men and animals and, you know, strange things. I mean, it could be a creation like today. We create things out of our own imagination and our mind, you know, what if, what could be, and make exciting stories. And, you know, some of them could have been that. However, there's still that possibility that it could be based on some things that people had seen. Because when we look at descriptions of angels in Scripture, we see that they're not, you know, these people with you know, wings and a little halo. They're not little babies floating around, you know, with a bow and arrow.
No, they don't have man's best interests at heart.
Well, the fallen angels absolutely do not. But we see just a description. When we look at a description of angels, we have to remember that these are angels that we're talking about. These fallen angels are still angels nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, when we see just a description of one, it says their faces looked like this. Each of the four had the face of a man, and on the right side, each had the face of a lion. On the left side, the face of an ox. Each also had the face of an eagle. So, you know, the creations of God, I mean, we see the variety, the magnificent beauty and variety of our own planet, and the animals and the birds and the fish of the sea. I mean, there's just no end. I mean, we still haven't even found all the species. I mean, we still find new species of animals that we didn't even know existed before.
No doubt about it.
It is so incredible. And when all of a sudden we couple that with what must be going on in that other 90-some-odd percent of the universe that we cannot see, it's mind-boggling. But it's limitless in its capacity.
So the potential, the fact that or the, not maybe not the fact, but the observation that we seem to be eternal beings, you know, placed here in a tabernacle that lasts, I don't know, maybe 100 years or so, an immortal state. But we are exposed to the breadth and depth of our universe and the possibilities of it. One lifetime certainly is not enough time to absorb all of this, so surely we must be ancient, you know, spirits here, even in mortality, and that we will exist for a long, long time after this.
Well, there's no doubt we go on existing. I mean, Paul in the New Testament commented that when we do, quote unquote, die, or the machine stops working. That's kind of how I was even brought up. My parents were very big on Ken. You got to understand that this, what you're looking at, is a machine. You know, it's put here to operate in these dimensions. But your spirit is alive. Your spirit is in contact. And that's one of the things we have to remember. Our spirit does operate in those other dimensions.
Sure does.
We do have the extra-dimensional capacity in our spirit. It's glorified. It was glorified at the time that the Messiah rose from the dead, when we entered into New Covenant. And now we call, you know, being born again or understanding the theocracy or and seeing, you know, the reality of the world, of the eternal world, that we actually do have, our spirits are glorified at that time. We do have powers and abilities through the Spirit in those other dimensions. And they're exercised, and I'm going to say that, you're not just by Christians. You know, this really gets into where it's a matter of faith. I mean, we see people operating in this realm all the time because there is, everything, again, is energy. There's a dark, what they, science calls it dark energy, I think, just because they have a lack of anything else, but it's what the Bible refers to as faith. Faith is a substance. You know, faith isn't, when we understand what faith is through God's eyes and through the Scriptures themselves and through the Bible, we understand that it is a power. It is a substance. It's not just a belief system. It's not just a positive attitude that believes everything's going to be okay. And we see that because it's not just even, well, let's just say, you know, like Anthony Robbins. You know, he'll get out there and he'll actually teach people how to literally believe, it's just as easy to believe that good things are going to happen as bad things.
Sure.
But it's almost like we're magnets. We end up getting what we believe for. You know, if a person walks around and they're in a negative state all the time, this man, bad things always happen to me. Nothing good ever happens to me. I never win anything. Then that's what they get.
And yet,
when we expect good things, man, I always win. You know, life is good. Good things always happen to me. I'm on a roll. Then those things happen. So we have to realize that there are powers and forces at work. Whether we believe it or not doesn't change the fact that they are.
That's exactly right.
We're literally going to get what we speak about, what we think about.
Right. Whether we believe it or not does not change any truth. Now, one of the questions I wanted to ask when we're talking about these past civilizations, we've also dug up the bones of dinosaurs, you know, huge, you know, almost megalithic animals, thousands of tons. Did these dinosaurs coexist with these ancient races of man?
Very possible. Very possible. There's nothing to say, there's nothing to say that that was not the case. There's nothing to say that, for a period of time, that may have just been what God was doing here. You know, we have to remember that the Creator is a big Creator. I mean, He's got things going on all over the place. You know, we shouldn't think that this is just the only area where anything is happening at all.
Right.
I mean,
we have relatives on other worlds.
And it's not, and they're probably what we would refer to as angelic beings. I think that the reality is so close. There seems to be like this veil where we want to say, angels are just in these other, floating around things. But yet, we also see in Hebrews, it says that we can actually entertain angels and not be aware of it.
Right.
I mean, they can operate in our dimension, and they can even appear as us. And that we can have interaction with them and not even be aware of it. So the fact that, a lot of times we're talking about, somebody who may not believe anything about the Bible, and then you might have somebody that believes everything in the Bible. Yet the two can be talking about the exact same thing and get hung up on semantics. A lot of times we're discussing the same things. I mean, an alien is a being that is just simply not from this planet.
Yeah, just because of that semantic, I prefer the term off-worlder instead of alien, because as soon as you mention alien, people go into this sci-fi
stupor. That's right.
And, you're one of those. But when you start talking about off-worlders, they go, what do you mean off-worlders? Well, you have to ask the question or qualify it. Surely, you don't believe that we're alone in the universe. And then sometimes even the most conservative ones will say, well, no, I don't believe we're alone in the universe, but, and then they'll qualify it with something, I've never seen one, or seeing is believing, or when they land on the White House lawn and say, we're here, then I'll believe. But, logic, even of a child, would reveal to us that it's preposterous to believe that that we are alone in the universe.
That's right. And some, it's a denial. It's too frightening to some. That's one of the reasons I really enjoyed the opening of the show. I mean, you made the comment, don't be afraid. And we see, in the Bible, time and time and time again, it says, fear not, fear not, fear not. God hasn't given us a spirit of fear, but He's given us a spirit of power, love, and of a sound mind.
Right, and lest people get caught up in the thought that we're dabbling where we shouldn't dabble, and believe me, in the next hour, if you have that fear, you better sit tight, because we're going to go somewhere where you probably have never thought about before. Humans do not have the capacity to fall any further than where we are right now. We don't have enough knowledge to do that. In other words, you've heard the term son of perdition in the scriptures. Well, you really have to have a knowledge and a familiarity much, much more in depth than you could possibly get as a mortal to become that. But that means that it doesn't mean that we can't rise up well beyond where we are right now. Most of us believe that what we see or what we hear or what we touch or taste, that's the extent of the universe. But our spirits tell us much, much more than that. We're, as Ken is saying, we're capable of sensing things beyond dimensional limits. And I think as we grow up, as we, you know, leave our childhood behind, we become more quote-unquote rational. We put away the sort of fairy tale kind of metaphysical interpretation of the universe, and we become more rational. In other words, what you can put in the bank, that's what's important. But all of us cannot deny that occasionally we become detached from time. We see things in the future, we sense things in the past, and we sense things between each other without even speaking. You can be in love with another person and sense that person. You can be a family member of that person. Or you can meet someone for the very first time in your whole mortal life and feel like you've known that person forever. There's much more interaction between the human spirit than what you might expect for mortals. And I'm going to try and, you know, lay the groundwork here for the second hour, because we've gotten to the point now in the discussion, we've talked about the possibility, not the possibility, the fact that there were super civilizations or civilizations before Adam, that Adam came along, Noah came along, and there, it appears as though that there's a periodic breakdown, not just in the genetic code, but in maybe the social code of mankind. Things have to be sort of rebooted from time to time. But recently, science, I will call it the Human Genome Project, in its course of development, we're seeking to map the whole human gene sequence. And I know originally, maybe 20 years ago, there were rumors going around that there were around 200,000 genes in the Human Genome series. But in 1999, at least the Sanger Center determined the famous sequence 22, and a number of around, 30,000 genes was entertained, far less than the 200,000. What's been done since then to give us a better picture of the true origin of the human race?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Well, the first thing, the key to remember when we start talking about gene, it is an amazing thing to map out the human genome. But we have to remember, too, that it's only 1% of the DNA strand.
Now, that's right.
You know, the other 99% we don't know about. I mean, it's referred to as junk, but then we turn right around and we use part of the 99% for DNA fingerprinting. I mean, we're letting people out of jail because of this, you know, evidence that we're finding in the 99%.
Mm-hmm.
So it just goes back to, you know, we have learned so much, but we still have so much to learn. And when we look, we have to remember also that Adam itself, there was a civilization, not only that pre-Adamic inhabitants that we know very little about, we know more about the civilization of Adam itself. And there is a civilization of people before what we see as what we refer to as the fall, or restriction in our dimensional capacity, or a restriction in our, you know, God-made abilities as a result of high treason. I mean, simply, there is a rebellion. There is a leader of that rebellion. There is a war going on in the universe between the Creator himself and one of the created, who wants to take his place. And during this period of time, we have mankind that is developed right in the middle of this thing, and God is replicating himself, and he has given all authority. But then Adam turns around and, through high treason, turns over this authority back to Satan. And it's at this time that we see what you just talked about, the social breakdown, or the Bible puts it this way, death began to enter in. The Creator is a life creator. I mean, he's all about life. You know, we talk about death, but the reality is we cannot confuse death with non-existence.
Exactly.
Where the body stops, but you keep on going. I mean, when we witness and we say, you know, you want eternal life. What we're really saying is, do you want eternal life with the Creator? Because you're going to get eternal life one way or the other. The only real question is, where is it? You know, existence versus a non-existence. Everything God creates continues to exist. It doesn't hit a point of non-existence one time. At least not the living things. You know, yes, his environments, yes, you know, the earth itself, things of this nature. But not that. But we see a time when the human race was everything it was designed to be. And the Cain and Abel were not the first children.
Right.
They were the first children that were born under the new when the timeline begins, when we see what we call a fallen state of man, we see many references in the Bible to before the beginning of time. And that beginning of time was the point that we're familiar with now, that we can look back around 6,000 years and see the existence of our world as it is. But before that time, there was many other people, because Adam and Eve were told immediately to begin to replenish the earth, and they did. They began at that point. But it says later, at the fall, or at the point of high treason, he makes a comment to Eve that I'm going to increase the pain of childbearing. So there wouldn't, if she hadn't been having kids anymore, or had not been having kids before that, there wouldn't have been any pain to increase.
Yeah, she wouldn't understand that term at all. What do you
exactly
mean increase?
You know, so they had been procreating. And we see, again, another evidence of this. After Cain kills Abel and he's banished, we actually see that there are other people out there, and he even looks at God and he says, hey, man, don't, if you send me out there, they'll kill me. Because if you could imagine this race that is on the planet where everything was perfect, and now the matriarch and the patriarch really messed things up. I mean, there had to be a sheer hatred, and they all had to know who God was, because at that point, God told him, he said, hey, I'm going to put a mark on you, and this way, when anybody that sees you, they'll know not to kill you. So it was very obvious that the other races, the other people that were here, part of that race, when they went out, that they knew who God was. Otherwise, the mark would not have made a difference at all.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why we see, at the time of the fall, why we see through so many, it doesn't matter where on the planet you are, what ancient civilization you're looking at, we see common themes. We see a lot of things that are similar, because they're all kind of describing what they saw to be the case back at that time.
So there was a common origin of things, and they kind of splintered out, and that's why we see this common thread in all these different civilizations, all these different religions, all these different philosophies, because they had a common origin.
That's right. In that particular race, it's why we see such remarkable things on this planet that just kind of boggle our minds, because there was a race. The thing is, at the point of the high treason, that was when things started to kind of come apart.
Let me ask you a question about that. How long had Adam been on the earth before Eve was created from his rib?
Well, let's just, easiest way, again, we don't have an absolute answer, but we do know it was quite some time, because he named all of the animals.
Right.
How long did that take?
I know if I was a zoologist, it would probably take me about 10,000 years. And, Adam was on the earth while all the animals were being created and organized and, reaching their ecological balance. Adam was here.
He was here, and he also, the reason for doing that, for God wanted him to be absolutely aware that when the woman showed up, that there was absolutely nothing else that was suitable to be a helper to him other than his wife. But the thing to remember also was that the two were equal in their relationship with God.
Yes.
Because, again, at the high treason, he looked at the woman, who he says in chapter 5, their name was Adam. But now when the fall came, he told Eve that now her affections were going to be toward her husband. So before, her affections were toward her husband. They were toward God.
Ah, I see.
So that's where we first, we see all of these things adjusting.
But now, at least from my reading, when Lucifer came to Adam first and said, you need to partake of this tree and become mortal and, learn the difference between good and evil, and Adam said no. Adam was smart and tough and intelligent, and he said no. And then Lucifer goes to Eve and tempts Eve, and Eve is the one that partakes first. So the evidence at least shows that now Eve is, because of the commandment, is going to be separated from Adam. And so Adam doesn't want that, so he partakes as well and joins Eve. And now they become ashamed of their nakedness. At least that's the way I read it.
Well, one of the things we noticed, too, was that Satan and his ability to deceive is so shrewd.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things that we really have to invest attention in is that the words that were used, in other words,
hello? Someone picked up the phone in the studio. It's all right.
Oh, that's okay. So, in other words, God told Adam and Eve that they could eat of any tree in the garden. And he told them, but they couldn't eat from this tree of life. But now he didn't say that they couldn't touch it. But now Adam came along and said, or told her, when it was, you know, when Eve was created, then he actually told her at that point that we can, you know, he's giving her the rules. God told him, now he's going to tell her. Of all, you know, anything in the garden, you can eat it and everything else, but not this tree of life. Don't even touch it.
Right.
But now, he didn't tell Adam, don't even touch it. He just said, or you'll die. He said, just don't eat of it, or
right,
you'll die.
Don't eat of it, or you'll
so
die.
So Satan comes along and says, isn't it true that God said not even to touch the tree, or you'll die? So at the point that she was able to touch the tree and death didn't occur, now she was able to question the rest of the story.
I see.
So that was where the deceit really was. She touched it, hey, I didn't die. Why not eat? So we see another importance of accuracy, and we understand, I mean, again, we should see into the Bible and not read into the Bible. But I can almost see, I mean, we do that with our own families. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
We don't want them to do one thing, so we just really drive it home. It's kind of like telling the kids, not only do you not look both ways, just don't even go into the street.
Right.
Just don't even go in the street because you'll get hit by a car. And then they jump in the street and realize, hey, I didn't get hit by anything.
I've been playing in the street all day and nothing bad has happened. Come on.
So they can question that. So that was the real deceit. And, of course, at that time, it's like you said, now all of a sudden we're in this fallen state. But, you know, you brought up the point earlier, too, about when we see the creation of Eve, we're seeing really the very first surgical technique. Because he puts Adam to sleep. He anesthetizes him.
Right.
He puts him under. And then he takes...
And takes a rib out.
And takes a rib. And not only that, when we look into the Hebrew now, again, some things become more obvious to us. We see that it really is making a reference to a helix curve. It's been translated rib.
Oh. No, go into a little more detail on that.
Well, the helix curve is really what it's saying in Hebrew. But taking that curve and the description of what it's saying, it was translated rib and spoken about as rib, but really what it's talking about is she was created from something that had a curve to it like that. So there's a strong possibility that he was really literally referring to his DNA.
That's what I got out of that. So he takes Adam's DNA and through master genetic engineering creates Eve, who is not a hybrid. Maybe I would the right word be clone? Only there.
Yeah, I think it would with genetic enhancements.
Yeah,
refer to them as enhancements.
I'm glad of that enhancement myself. Well, listen, we're at the top of the first hour. I can't believe it's blown by already. I got to do about five little commercials here. If you want to take a short break, we will return to you at 5 after, if that's okay. And I'll do these commercials, and we'll do about a 48-second musical break, and we will be right back. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio. My guest tonight is Ken Parson. Hey, one of the things that we have learned here at X Squared Radio from our emails is that many listeners to this program are educators. Well, we have recently added a great affiliate for you. The Academic Superstore is the place where you can buy software, neat tools and gadgets, and even supplies such as calculators and iPod peripherals at huge discounts. The best things for the classroom and for the student are just a tax-free click away. All you have to do is click the Academic Superstore sign at X Squared Radio and start saving. Now, the space shuttle fleet is very soon going to be retired. No other spacecraft in history has advanced the world more than this fleet. Well, I wanted a way to keep that memory alive in my home, so I went to the space store and I ordered a 25-inch model of the Space Orbiter. It is very nice. People who have seen it always comment on the incredible attention to detail in this model. If you think you know someone who loves the space program and you want to give them a gift that they will never forget, you should visit the Space Store at X Squared Radio. People are always looking for something inexpensive and unique to give people they love. Well, now there is a way to give a gift that not only says how long you will love them, but it allows you to keep the great planet green and growing. Tree Givers is the company that will plant a tree on public lands somewhere in the 50 states and provide your special person with a beautiful certificate of that placement. This has become one of the most popular gift sites in the world, and because of their love for Earth, they are changing the world. So visit Tree Givers at X Squared Radio and see if you can find a gift for your special person. You know, today is Mother's Day. Now, I don't know how many mothers would really like to own a great telescope, but I know some. A really good telescope. Well, at the Discovery Store, you can find the world's best telescopes at great discounts and free shipping. They have come a long, long way, you know. Most of the comets discovered in the last 50 years were found by amateurs. These telescopes are almost point and click. You just set them up, push a button, and it'll go to the star or the nebula or the planet that you want to look at. You no longer have to search the skies on your own. There's no better way to view the sun than with a coronoscope. Trust me, you will be captivated if you ever get to watch the sun through one of these units. And who knows, you just might save the planet. So plan a trip to the Discovery Store at X Squared Radio. And we will be back after a 48-second musical interlude. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio. Explorers to X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Agnew, and our guest tonight is Ken Parson. Our first hour, we treaded into new territory, talking about biblical evidence for the existence of races not only prior to Adam, but also concurrent with Adam, and the fact that Adam and Eve, although cast out of the Garden of Eden, certainly didn't know each other in the biblical sense. They kept with it and were replenishing the earth all along. And one question I wanted to ask you, I know we talked about maybe how long Adam existed before Eve was created from his rib, an excellent genetic engineering description. How long do you think Adam and Eve lived in the Garden of Eden before Eve was actually tempted? I mean, how old do you think they were at that time?
Well, the term old, I don't know that we could apply that because of the dimensional capacity. You know, when we look at God, he has access to different timelines. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the ways, kind of explain it this way, if you had a broomstick, and that broomstick is a linear timeline,
mm-hmm.
then that would be us. You know, everybody on this linear timeline. You know, if you looked at 1965, it's down here on the broom. 2006, it's up here on the broom.
I got you.
Yet God, it says that a day is like 1,000 years. We get that a whole lot, but we have to remember it goes both ways. It says that, or 1,000 years is like a day. So in other words, he is... timelessness wouldn't be the word we would apply. It would be time fullness that we could apply because of his dimensional capacity for different timelines. But that would mean that to God, he could be possessing another timeline. It says that 1,000 years could be could pass what it would seem like a thousand years to us, could seem like a single day to him. Or what seems like a single day to us could seem like a thousand years to him.
So he could really experience a moment. He could just stretch out a moment for thousands of years.
Exactly. Well, if you took another broomstick and therefore made that like another linear timeline, but laid it over our linear timeline like a plus sign, then that would explain how he can listen to everybody's prayers at once.
Right.
Because he would be experiencing this whole timeline in a cross-section with our linear timeline. So he's not limited. You know, it's why time travel is a possibility. And we see John, who was a first century man, was literally time traveled to the 21st century when we start looking at the book of Revelation. So much of the, one of the keys to understanding Revelation or seeing into it is understanding that it's a first century man describing 21st century events through the eyes of a man from the first century. We also see in the Gospel of John, the Revelation was the first book that John wrote. A lot of people are under the impression that he wrote the Gospel of John first and then 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, simply because that's how they fall, you know, chronologically in the Bible itself. However, Revelation was his first book. Then he wrote the Gospel of John in the three letters. It's one of the reasons why the only time we see the word Antichrist is in two of the three letters of John. And it's because he had already had that experience. It's one of the reasons why the Gospel of John, we refer to the Matthew, Mark, Luke as synoptic Gospels because they're so similar. But then the Gospel of John is just out there. I mean, it starts way different. It's different all the way through.
Sure.
Because he has a different perspective. And he also points out towards the end of that Gospel that Jesus had made the comment, hey, what is it to you guys if I want one of you to stay alive until they see the second coming? And then, of course, John says, well, they thought that that meant one of them would stay alive forever. But, in essence, what it meant was John did live to see it, but he was time-traveled there and then brought back. So, in other words, God is experiencing, you know, it's almost like, you know, when he steps out, it's like a beautiful rug, you know, a real nice carpet that has designs all over it. You know, if you're actually just a thread in that carpet, you know, that would be us. But God looks at the entire thing at one time. So he's seeing all of our time at once and able to experience all of it at once. So when we look at Eve, then it, during that period of time, then we would have to understand that before the fall or the beginning of the timeline that we now know, you know, there wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't be a how old. It would just be, you know, perhaps maybe a how long. But we really couldn't, you know, we really couldn't look at that and be able to really understand. But in the same way that we look at Adam, how long did that take to name all the animals, it's the same sort of a thing. When we understand how big of an amount of time that the Bible is covering, you know, it could have been, we know it was a while because, again, there was an entire race of people before the fallen state, before the Cain and Abel. You know, and then that was the first time that we see the social collapse. You know, before this high treason, we'd never... you know, God gave dominion, he gave humankind dominion over everything, but he didn't give us dominion over other people. That wasn't part of the deal. But as soon as we see this fallen state, now we have men who literally try to enforce authority over other men.
I know when reading extra biblical sources, like, well, let's say the book of Enoch.
Oh, yeah.
It was only originally in one language, then translated into Slavonic, and I think Lawrence translated into English somewhere in the mid 19th century. It's a pretty clean book in the sense that it doesn't it's not fragmented. It's contiguous all the way through. But what it seems to describe to me is Enoch sort of being requested to go to God on behalf of these, giants, which I guess are the offspring of these fallen angels and mortal women, and try to petition for their survival. And although Enoch goes and asks, he never actually gets the permission. He tells them pretty much in the book, look, your doom is sealed. You all are going to be destroyed in a flood, and the flood is going to come, and there's really nothing you can do about it. But Enoch really clearly, in this book of Enoch, clearly lays out a relationship between the mortals that were descendants of Adam and Eve, and certainly Enoch was one of those, and Noah was one of those, and these fallen humans, these more fallen humans, I guess, or giants, that a certain number of them were going to be saved, and the vast majority of them were going to be wiped out. And of course, Enoch and his city, they don't go through the flood. They're taken off the planet before the flood occurs. So, but the reason that the flood was going to occur was that society, or at least the order that had originally been set up for the creation of man, got corrupted somehow. It got the institution of one man, one woman, just got wiped out. I mean, incest was rampant, and homosexuality was rampant, and the institution of bonding a man and a woman together into one being, which I found fascinating, because wasn't Adam and Eve at one point one being, and one was engineered from the other. All that got corrupted, all that got changed by these off-worlders and these giants coming in and literally corrupting the creation. So now the planet's going to be rebooted in this flood. And, you know, that's what I found fascinating about the Book of Enoch. What did you find in there?
The same thing. The Book of Enoch seems to be just a much more fine-tuned description of what we see in Genesis 6. And the incredible thing that we see, we remember that the fallen angels had lost dimensional capacity. Also, Lucifer, who at one time, you know, the light bringer, he had a high-ranking place in heaven, but now he's fallen. He's part of the rebellion. He wanted to be God, yet he wasn't God. You know, he is not God. You know, God's capable of things. It has always been capable of things that Lucifer is not. You know, he's being everywhere at one time is one of those things. You know, but being able to create, you know, is one of those things.
But Lucifer and his angels being capable of much more than mortal men was often heralded as a god.
But one of the ways that what they wanted to do is find out, they used science. That was their way, technology. They were the first to figure, they were trying, in other words, look what doctors do. When we are learning about the human body, in essence, what we're doing is reverse engineering.
Yes, that's right.
And so that's what Lucifer was doing. They were basically reverse engineering. What is it about this race of being? Because remember, we were created higher than him. We were created with a greater authority than him. We had free will, and we were expected to use it. We had creative power, and we're expected to use it. And so he wanted to know. He wanted to somehow be able to tap into that. I look at Lucifer as almost a master scientist. But while they were mastering technology, that was how they got to the women. And Enoch mentioned the fact that when these fallen angels came to mankind or humankind, they traded access for access to the women. They gave technological secrets, quote unquote secrets. And where in Genesis 6 we just see, you know, the sons of God, you know, came down and they saw the women and they said they were beautiful and they said let's take them for wives and all this. But when we look at Enoch, he gets much more specific. He tells us how many there were. He gives us
around
their names.
Around 200, right? Around 200.
And he also talks about how they taught the mankind how to make weapons, how to use plants, almost probably how to use plants for drugs.
How to make metals. And
how to make metals. And basically taught humankind how to sin on a hyper scale. You know, it wasn't just sin in the ordinary sense anymore. This is like super sin. And it just destroyed mankind. And it was, like you said, it destroyed the entire order of things. Where, you know, we could. There's a lot of similarity with what we see happening even today.
All right, we're going to get into that in a lot more detail in the third hour, but that's a good preview of it. So now, this hyper science, I mean, these are immortals. These are people that have, well, these are angels in a fallen state that have access to incredible knowledge. And they're giving it to, well, let's say they give some weaponry to one army and the same weaponry or similar technology to another army, and then they watch them fight.
That's right.
But the science goes much further than that. What I want to ask is there evidence, since we've been doing this genome research, we're actually getting into it in a very expensive and very high-tech way, is there evidence that someone has been playing or engineering the gene sequence of man over the generations?
Yes. Absolutely. That's what one of the things that we saw there. Now, what we do remember is that they were wiped out. They were wiped out for that specific reason.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Noah and his family, they were of a pure genetic. But many things began to change. I mean, there's other things that are having an impact on the DNA. There's other things having an impact on genes. And that is the simple fact that the way that the flood occurred in the first place, it was, you know, God made it perfectly clear, and it says in Genesis 6, that the Nephilim, or the giants, were on the earth in those days. But it also says, and also afterward. But then God gives a couple, you know, really long sentences, making sure, when God gives out a laundry list, in other words, he doesn't just say everything that had the breath of life in it died,
mm-hmm.
other than Noah and his family.
Right.
It doesn't just say that. It goes on and says, you know, everything on dry land that had the breath of life in its nostrils died. Every living thing on the face of the earth was wiped out. Men and animals, every creature that moves along the ground, and the birds of the air were wiped out from the earth. Only Noah was left and those with him in the ark. Yet, earlier, it said that the Nephilim were on the earth in those days and also afterward. And the thing to remember and grasp is that these were a hybrid race. Every time that God created a race, he created an environment for that race first.
Right.
First he creates the environment, then he creates inhabitants for that environment. But these hybrids were not an authorized race. They had no environment that was designed for them.
Right. They didn't live very long, and they didn't die gracefully. They often committed suicide because, you know, gravity and the way this world operates wasn't prepared for that kind of body, and it did not age gracefully at all.
That's right. But it did have the breath of life. So when that body stopped, whereas mankind... when their bodies ceased to exist, again, we can't confuse death with non-existence.
Right.
Their spirits went on, but they had a place where they would go. But the Nephilim had no place. Those spirits are, it says they were on the earth in those days, and also afterwards, those spirits are still here. Their spirits had nowhere to go. They were a mix between a fallen angel and man, something not created by God, yet still had a spirit. And that's where we get the demons that we wrestle with today.
So you don't think that physically they came back? I know in Numbers, I believe it's Numbers chapter 33, it talks about, of course, this is well after the flood, that these giants still existed, or that they returned. Maybe they
We have some people where, you know, it talks about how big they were, and it talks about them being giants, or really big people. But whether or not they were actually the offspring, I mean, we see when Joshua's group went into the Promised Land and came back, and they say, hey, man, we were like grasshoppers in their sight. You know, one of the reasons why God was upset with them was because it almost seemed to be their attitude, just because these other people were bigger. So there's the possibility that they were simply, in essence, just being really negative. They were larger people, true. But now there's also the possibility that these fallen angels had already, again, come down and started messing with the genes. I mean, I'm not going to say that didn't happen either.
Yeah,
but we do know that the group of fallen angels, or the beings that he was talking about specifically in Genesis 6, those are the ones he was referring to about also being there afterwards. And it's those spirits, again, that's the difference between a demon and a fallen angel. See, a fallen angel has a body. Fallen angels don't possess people.
Right.
They have a body. But
yeah,
a demon is disembodied. Demons do possess people.
And we kind of have to, well, there's, I guess, a metaphysical barrier between us and them unless we relinquish ourselves voluntarily to that possession.
Yeah. Well, we got the ghosts, and we got, I mean, there's, you know, the apparitions, and we see these things. And so, I mean, there's entities out there. And I'm just saying, and some of them could even be... when we look at the fullness of possibility, I mean, it could even be that scenarios like this had even occurred in that pre-Adamic race.
Right.
It could be that even that there might have even been a scenario where there was an energy or a spirit of people that were still here as a result of something that had happened in that pre-Adamic. We really don't know. But we do know that there are demon spirits. We do know Jesus, you know, cast them out, even sent them into a herd of pigs. And we see modern examples of this. We even saw, I watch Sci-Fi Channel, we like to watch the Ghost Hunters on there. And one of the things that we watch that I found so fascinating is that they had the thermal camera, and one of them was getting a quote-unquote a reading from a psychic. And they just happened to have the thermal camera on them, but you could see a red heat that literally lifted from the person that he was giving, the person that was getting the reading, moved across the room and went to the person that was giving the reading.
My.
And I mean, and they were like, man, we've just never seen anything like that. So, and that's another example of how our technology is just catching up and proving this, things that are happening in these other realms or these other dimensions. You know, that there's physical reactions and responses and things that are happening as a result of things that are happening in the spiritual. But that's one of the things that we see with those giants, is that when their body ceased, they still had spirits that were left here. And again, it's my belief and my perception that they're what we struggle against when it comes to demonic scenarios, and I think it explains the ghosts, it explains apparitions and things of this nature.
Mm-hmm.
And, but now, when we want to get into that genetic part of it, Satan hasn't given up on that. Again, he wants to see what makes us tick. He wants to somehow get a tap into the potential that God has given us in an attempt to create, again, maybe a super race. You know, I think we're seeing possible evidences of that today. I mean, with the technology explosion that we're seeing. Yeah, there's, you know.
Well, let me ask you a question about that. I mean, it seems as though when we look at genetic research, we look at the capabilities of human beings, we look at modern man compared to ancient man, is there evidence that modern man, you and I, are present day, that we're at least a hybrid and, you know, maybe a completely genetically engineered being? Is there evidence of that?
I think that in the same... I don't believe so. I believe that for the most part, I'm not saying that there are not genetically created hybrids that are on the planet. I'm not willing to say that there's not some that are in existence.
Okay.
But I am willing to say that, like for me and you, at least I'm assuming that you're not, I know I'm not, you know, a hybrid. I don't think that those genes have bled in to our race at all. I think that was one of the reasons he destroyed the planet back at the time that he did. But now we see all kinds of things happening with genetics, whether it's creating a test tube baby or whether it's cloning or whether it's these things. So maybe the results of the technology are coming through humankind. And we may be dealing with some of that, but it's not my perception that you and I are walking around with some angelic genes, you know, embedded in our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I would think that the angels themselves would benefit more by having our genes embedded in them than we would having their genes embedded in us. In other words, it would actually be a decrease of our potential because we were created higher than the angels.
Right. Hmm. Wow, that's very fascinating stuff. Now, we talked about DNA at least being an engineered molecule, and that Eve being created from Adam. I don't know if that makes Eve a clone of Adam or a hybrid of Adam or whatever, but anyway, the two were fertile together, and we are the genetic descendants of that, at least up to Noah. Now, when Noah got here, at least from what I've been able to read, not just in the Bible but in other books as well, he told the inhabitants that he came upon that he had sailed across the cosmic sea, and the people that were with Noah, obviously, you know, mixed, were sent around the planet and mixed with the people that were here. Although you'd have to admit, probably only 5% of the population survived this cataclysm. So,
well, see, and that's where you and I are going to fall into the realm of agreeing to disagree. Because it's my perception that absolutely every living thing on the planet died other than what was in the ark.
But the ark would have had to have been the size of California to hold all the life that we see here on this planet.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Again, sometimes we can't confuse evolution with adaptation.
Well, I agree.
In other words, the animals themselves, it was, I'm going to go with that, that somehow that they did replenish themselves, and that as they moved through different terrains and different areas, perhaps they, you know, bled out into different types of, again, species and things of this nature in a way of adaptation. But the animals themselves were survived simply in that arc.
Well, as a scientist, I look at it and I see animal storage going on for a period of, I don't know, 7 months or so, and that many species on an arc that long with only 8 people to take care of them for that long a period.
And that's where we have to cross over into an area of faith and the understanding of the power of God. It's the same thing as, you know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego being in the fiery furnace. You know, a person put into that furnace should have burned to a crisp, yet they didn't. You know, the sandals that were on the Israelites as they went through the desert those 40 years should have worn out, but they didn't. You know, in other words, the power of God had so much to do with that. But again, that's just an area where you and I will end up just agreeing to disagree.
Well, I don't particularly hold to any idea. I just want to discuss it and think about it, because that's probably the one thing that separates scientists from religious people or faithful people, is that the faithful people say, well, everything that you see on the earth today, every race, every bird, every penguin, every lion, every elephant was on that boat.
Every lion, tiger, and bear.
Yeah, and everything, you know, that was on the earth was destroyed by the flood. Even the things that live in water were destroyed by water. And I guess that's where, you know, when we do our genetic research, at least on animals, for instance, one of the guests that I spoke to previously, we talked about the cheetah and the fact that there's no genetic variety in the cheetah. The cheetah is a cloned animal. It's a clone. It doesn't have variety. And it's also an engineered animal. It's a dog with a cat head. It has dog feet, dog fur, dog bones, dog organs, but it's got a cat head. It's built for hunting. And I use the word literally built. It was not evolved. So, and I don't know if the early descendants of Noah had that ability to genetically engineer and make more.
Well, yeah, and see, you and I, this is another example. We're saying the same thing, but for one thing, I think, in my reading, you know, if it lived in the water, it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of made the comment that it was the thing, everything on dry land that had the breath of life in it. So fish were kind of safe. But the thing is, I think we're saying the same thing. The animals that came off the ark, Adam or Noah may not have had that technological ability, but God did.
Right.
And so, in other words, there was still the miraculous. Well, obviously, you're saying, man, it would have been a miracle if those animals were able to repopulate the planet afterwards. And that's kind of what I'm saying. You know, the miraculous was still happening. And one of the things, too, that we see was the earth was so different after the flood, because up until the flood, there had not been any rain. You know, it says that the springs of the deep would mist, and there was almost like a greenhouse effect. There was some type of a firmament or a canopy of some type that actually was around the earth, protected the earth. There was sunlight, but the oxygen content was much greater. We had much greater capacity even at that time, because that was also when God said, hey, you know, I'm not going to let man keep on living this 1,500 years. You know, I'm going to limit his days to 120. And then it says that this canopy that had surrounded the earth had collapsed, which was water. And then also the springs of the deep had broken up, which means we also had continent changes. I mean, that the earth just didn't look anything like what it did before the flood. It was absolutely completely different, because we had the shaking or the springs breaking apart from the deep, the canopy of water that had come down, which created the rain, which was the first time it had ever rained on the planet.
Right.
And so that was when we saw the first rainbow, and God put into covenant, and he said, the rainbow is the evidence that I will never flood the earth again this way. And obviously so, because you know now everything changed. Without that canopy, now we have the rays of the sun. We're absolutely unprotected from the rays of the sun. The oxygen content was much less. And then also we were, you know, we were at that point gone to eating animals.
Right.
You know, there had, you know, back, you know, in the earlier times in the scripture, we see that the only thing any animal ate, you know, during the time of perfection before the fall was simply, mm-hmm. you know, vegetation.
Right. Now, one of the things that we talk about a little bit in physics, and we try to examine planetary descriptions prior to the flood and after the flood, is that it's possible that this movement of the Earth was so cataclysmic that the Earth was perhaps straight up and down on its axis relative to the sun, so that there really were no seasons. The Earth was in like a temperature equilibrium. With the, if we did have polar caps, they were extremely small, and which would have put a lot more moisture into the air, and of course the jet stream would be radically different than it is right now, although we move billions of gallons of water every day around the planet in our atmosphere. In those days, it would have literally been a fog atmosphere. And then if you tilt the Earth the 23 degrees that we are relative to the sun, now you have seasons. As we go around the sun in our orbit, where the sun shines above and below the equator radically changes the weather and, of course, creates our ice caps. And because of the lack of moisture in our atmosphere, we are exposed to a lot of cosmic radiation. Although our magnetosphere protects us from most of it, you can still go outside and get a sunburn. I think prior to the flood of Noah, it would have been impossible to get a sunburn. You would not have been exposed to that kind of radiation, which might have something to do with the extreme longevity. So all that's possible, and
that is cool. I mean, just everything that you're saying to me is just absolutely cool.
You know, but what? What kind of force it would take to move a planet our size on its axis?
Let's hope we never find out again.
It could have been the exact same force that shattered the planet that makes up the asteroid belt today. All it would take is a close pass of a good-sized gravitational body, and you've yanked all the oceans around on one side of the planet, which you know, bury a whole continent in water. And, of course, when it receded, you'd bury the other continent in water. And in the meantime, whatever is the North Pole would probably point toward that planet as it passed by, which would definitely lean us in our orbit. And then that planet, if maybe it was a free-floating planet, or hopefully it's not an orbiting planet that's going to come back and do it again. But when I read Revelations, sometimes it looks like a description of past events, you know, stars falling from the sky and all of that. And sometimes it reads like a future event.
Well, actually, you're right. It does both.
Yeah.
It's very chronological. In other words, the seals that we see at the beginning, I believe it's a strong misconception. Many believe that that's the beginning of the seven-year cycle where all this stuff starts to happen. But it's exactly like you said. The seals themselves are literally the story of what began to happen at original fall. Now, I see the tribulation, a great tribulation, the last 7 years, and that's what you're referring to, is the parts that speak as though they're future events.
Right.
You know, which would be the trumpets and things of this nature. But the seals themselves, it's obviously speaking of past events, because it talks about men killing one another, and
mm-hmm.
we used to not kill each other. I mean, Adamite race themselves, before the high treason, before the fall of mankind, before this linear timeline that we're talking about, there was none of that. You know, the animals didn't kill other animals even for food. Everything ate vegetation. And, you know, we see that. I mean, there were no men trying to dominate other men. And that's one of the things we see with the first seal. There was no murder, but we saw that right off Jump Street. There was no, you know, there was no famine before that.
Right.
But yet there is much famine now. And as a matter of fact, he told Cain that when you work the fields, it's not going to produce anything for you. That was the first time that we see famine entering into our system, into our way of life here. And it follows all the way through these seals up until, you know, we see what was like a great earthquake and the sun turns black like sackcloth. And it says the stars in the sky fell to the earth. You know, and the sky recedes like a scroll. I remember watching September 11th. I mean, that was whether the person that was explaining what he was seeing on the television thought meant or knew he was doing it or not, I don't know. But when he saw the smoke coming up when that building collapsed, his very words were, "It's just receding like a scroll. It looked like almost a mushroom cloud." And that's really what we're looking at here, is it's all culminating in what we see as the nuclear age, you know, with possibly the nuclear bombs or even the asteroids entering the atmosphere and hitting the Earth and impacting it, which we know we've had. Back in the 1900s, we had an impact where the people in England were reading their newspaper in the middle of the night because of the light left over from it.
Yeah, we watched a string of pearls, a comet strike
Saturn.
Jupiter. Yeah, we watched it strike Jupiter.
Yeah.
The Shoemaker-Levy and the impacts on Jupiter, although, you know, weren't really cataclysmic to that planet.
No, but that was sure something to see.
Each impact was about the size of our planet.
Yeah, I know.
So it's a good thing we have that giant vacuum cleaner in our solar system to take care of all that stuff. And, of course, now, as I was mentioning at the top of the show, the Schwassmann comet has broken apart, and you know what the particles that we can see, there's about 60, but there's probably more than 100 of them, and you know, they passed across the Ring Nebula and the Lyra system a few days ago, and now we're getting close. Earth is getting close to the pathway of the tail of all those comets, and I think in the next 2 or 3 days we're going to have a fantastic meteor shower. Hopefully it won't be anything significant like the size of a city bus, but we just don't know. You can't see everything with telescopes. It has to put off light for us to
see.
That's
right.
And if it's not, if it's solid metal and not solid ice, then it's not going to leave a tail, and we're not going to see it until it's too late.
Yeah, that's always been the thing. I mean, we talk about seeing the asteroid and knowing it was coming, and what can we do to you know, kick it away or stop it. But the reality is, it's probably not the one that we see coming that's going to get us.
Yeah,
end up being the one that we don't see.
It reminds me of, at the time, you know, Enoch was talking with the giants that were here and explaining to them, you know, you guys are pretty much doomed because you're not going to make it on the ark, and we're not going to be here. We're going to be off planet somewhere. You know, it's clear that everybody on the planet knew this cataclysm was coming. You know, they knew that the Earth was going to be flooded, but because of their technology and the deception of the fallen angels, who were immortal beings anyway, they knew they weren't going to be wiped out in the flood. They're going to survive it somehow.
And see, there's probably, just like today, a certain amount of doubt and unbelief. I mean, because they had never seen rain.
Or they thought that technology would save them.
Yeah.
We'll just go to higher ground, or we'll fly, or we'll do something, but, you know, we're not going to be killed.
We hear that today, don't we? All the time. Well, yeah, we'll figure something out.
Well, sure. Sure you have people. And people.
Yeah, bird flu, no problem. We'll get a vaccine.
A guy asked me the other day, you know, now how could 90% of the population of the United States be wiped out in a single day by a tsunami or something? And I told him, you know, it's a geographical fact that 90% of the population of the United States lives within 20 miles of a coast. You know, a mere 1,500-foot tsunami would wipe us out in an afternoon.
That's incredible. I did not know that.
Yes, that's true. I mean, that's why we call the rest of the country flyover country. If you go up and down the West Coast, the East Coast, the Southern Coast, and in a couple hundred miles on the major rivers from these major bodies of water, that's it. That's
so they within 90% of the population live within what distance of a coast?
20 miles.
Wow.
And it's pretty much the same on any coastal country. Look at England. I've been to England a few times, and one of the things that I notice is when you're along the coast, it's quite dense. I mean, there's a lot of population, very little property open. But when you get out in the countryside heading up for Scotland, it looks just like Kentucky. Vast open spaces. Less than 10% of the population lives in that highland area. The rest of the people live right along the sea.
That's amazing. I wonder why that is.
Oh, I guess, you know, up until about 130 years ago, we didn't have refrigeration. You relied on the seaport for your food. And we still truck our food from the coast to the inland areas. I promise you, if diesel fuel stopped flowing Monday morning, by Friday, we would be in mass migration to the coast so that we could survive.
That makes sense. Sure does.
So, you know, what I see is maybe these ancient civilizations around Noah's time had the technology that they thought they could get off planet or inside the planet or inside a cave or a mountain or a shelter of some kind. I mean, they had the knowledge. They had energy systems and communication systems. The Egyptians have carvings of craft and technology that we don't understand. Certainly they know how to do things with stone we have no idea how to do. So they had some pride about them that they didn't have to worship Noah's God.
They felt like the technology that these fallen angels who were or their gods had it under control.
Pretty much the way the scientific community does today.
And that's kind of like how we see in Matthew, as in the days of Noah.
Well, now when the apostles were asking Christ, you know, well, when is this all going to end? When is when are you going to come back again? And Jesus describes the conditions of the day when he would return. And man, when I read that, and it doesn't matter if I read it, you know, casually or if I really go into details and start cross-referencing it, it sure looks like today.
Well, you just said it. I mean, with the comet breaking apart and going past us and us seeing it, and then we remember, too, when the tsunami hit over in Asia, it was a couple years ago, there were people that actually died of heart attacks before the water ever even hit.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and then what you're referring to is over in Luke, and it says that there will be sign in the sun, moon, and stars on the earth. Nations will be in anguish and perplexity at the roaring and tossing of the sea. Men will faint from terror, apprehensive of what is coming on the world, for the heavenly bodies will be shaken. At that time, they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory.
And what is it they say about the sign of the Son of Man that some people would say it is a planet?
Well, yeah, shaking of the heavens. They're just really, it's making a reference to the technology that we have of really knowing what's out there.
You mentioned earlier that the sound of a trump. When I was studying spectroscopy and did about 20 years of research in it, not just Earth spectroscopy, but also space, one of the things that is pretty peculiar is as two heavenly bodies come together, they begin to exchange energy. If they stay far enough apart, they won't shatter each other, but they do exchange energy, and some of it's in the form of these huge space-jumping lightning bolts, like when you come close to a doorknob after rubbing your feet across the carpet, you get a lightning bolt hits your finger and jerks your arm, or when you, every time
yeah.
I get out of my Dodge pickup truck, I go to lock the door, and that darn thing about knocks me to the ground. But one of the vibrations that occurs as this energy transfers back and forth is in the audible range. And one book that I read said that it would almost, if this energy survived the gap, and we survived the exchange of energy, it would sound like a trumpet. That's what he said it would sound like, that the vibrations set up in the sky as a heavenly body came close to the earth, you would hear a hum like a note from a trumpet.
Yeah, that's incredible. And I think, you know, planets themselves even emit the sounds, do they not?
Sure they do. Earth,
yeah.
The frequency of Earth is 7.8 hertz.
How about that?
And, you know, we do a lot of experimentation with extremely low frequency. We call it ELF. We use it, unfortunately, governments use it for mind control. They use it, well, every cruise ship is equipped with sonic weapons to protect themselves from being boarded by enemies.
Now, does that fall under the topic of non-lethal technologies?
Yes, it is non-lethal technology, but it's been taken a couple steps further than that. We're actually able to send messages with this kind of technology directly to the brain without going through the ears. We can put images in people's minds. We can make it sound like a voice is speaking to you in your mind. We can create anxiety, sleeplessness, diarrhea, paranoia. And trust me, these weapons have been used and are being used as we speak in warfare.
Sounds like it's just a very confused population at the end, does it not?
Well, it's a little bit, I think it's a little bit like the ancient population, you know, prior to the flood. Here you had these immortals who were in many cases worshipped as gods. They had completely corrupted the order of mankind. They maybe even have dabbled in genetic corruption like the likes of which we can only imagine. We fortunately have laws to prevent that kind of experimentation, but I can guarantee it's going on out there.
Oh, yeah.
The temptation is too great with this kind of technology to create a super race or a race that can survive or live forever. Believe me, if there's money to pay for it, or a government that thinks it can benefit from it, they're spending the money to do it, and they're experimenting with it, even if the newspapers aren't reporting it. But I think we're a little bit like that ancient society, in that we think that we can just about survive anything. Unless a killer comet comes and smacks into the planet, we're going to survive it. And it's going to be the ones that have the gold that are going to do the surviving. It's not going to be the rank and file. I think there's that level of pride in our technology today.
That's right. And pride comes before a fall.
Well said. Definitely well said. One of the things that hurts us, I think, it hurts us in everything. It hurts us in music. It hurts us in writing. It hurts us in new science. Is that the established science or the established musical industry decides on what gets to the people and what doesn't.
That's right.
And so as you and I are talking here on these airwaves, and you know, we have a few hundred thousand people listening live, and we'll have a few million people that listen to this as an archive, I hope that they open their eyes a little bit and look around and see that, you know, this existence on this planet is tenuous at best.
Well said.
And we really should be realizing that we are eternal beings. This is just a mortal experience. Not to get too hung up on mortgages and the shine of our cars and the price of our college degrees hanging on the wall. There's much, much more to the human experience than that. And I think it's more simple, it's more divine, it's more inspirational than most people want to admit. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but I can tell you that
I think that everything that you're saying falls so in line with what we see in just the history of existence. I think would be the best way to describe this, because we're not just talking about our planet or our solar system or this universe. We're talking about so much more. Again, that 90 some odd percent of what we that is there, but we can't see it, touch it, feel it, smell it, but it is there. And the reality is that there is a force, a dark force, that is trying to keep us from the reality and the light of understanding that there is a divine creator that had put everything that we see into motion. And if we invest enough time, if we stop, if we pull ourselves out of that cubicle at work, if we step away from our shiny car, if we'll just, you know, we're so focused on that next check, and rightfully so, because you know, we have to provide for our families. We've got to get food. We've got to pay bills. We have to deal with all of the emotional, you know, drama that goes with living in this 21st century. But at some point, we've got to stop. It is a distraction, and it is an attempt to divert everybody. It is a spiritual attempt to divert us away from the real issue, which is what you just said. What is really going on? We have to look over the wall out there and see that this is not just a physical world that we can touch, that there is eternal consequences or eternal scenarios that await us far beyond what we see in our physical existence here on this planet.
You know, we talk about us being able to look out and maybe with our hearts or our spirits sensing the rest of the universe that's out there. Do you think there's a portion of the universe that looks at us and kind of gets frustrated with us?
I believe they're among us. I believe that they possessing or being in a dimension that exceeds our capacity, that they definitely, they probably wonder, look what mankind has created to do such great, fantastic things. How are they so easily deceived, the majority of them? How are they so easily deceived into thinking that the way to live their life is to stare at this TV set until they fall asleep at night? That, you know, or just seeking after pleasure after pleasure after pleasure after pleasure. You know, we see how many families are so. I mean, just I mean, for a second, just forget all the spiritual stuff. I mean, just realistically, how many people have the treasures in their home with these children who are such a fascinating, incredible thing to watch grow up? I mean, you get a chance to live a whole other childhood when you invest time with your kids. Like Yogi Berra said, I can't believe all the memories I forgot. You know, but they're so busy, they're out at work, or they're out playing, or they're out searching after something, trying to fill a void, when all the time the greatest pleasure and the greatest treasure is right there at their home and the relationships that they have with other people, or even mankind with each other. Look at what we can do. Look what, as mankind, we have been able to do. It is such an amazing thing. But to use it for such destructive purposes, I don't see how any race of being created by the Creator on any level, in any dimension, couldn't look and just wonder, especially when we are a race of people that were literally God replicating himself before high treason was created by our matriarch and patriarch. And to this day has been reestablished, through the Messiah 2,000 years ago, and now we have so much more through a new covenant that is right there, an authority that's there for us to take. You know, being able to create ourselves with the words that we speak. Choose you this day life or death. You know, we can choose life or we can choose death, and we have such a culture of death anymore when we should be chasing after and really searching for a culture of life. You know, it's in our verbiage. It's in our language. I mean, why? When my kids do something and I'm just laughing hysterical, man, I am laughing to life. I'm not laughing to death. You know, I'm laughing to life. It's in the verbiage that we use. It's much easier when you look at your little kid and you say, man, you don't say, I love you to death. I mean, what is it that takes us that direction as opposed to the reality of it, which is, man, I love you to life.
Well said. I really like that. I think I'll put that on my bumper. You're right. You're exactly right. We get caught up in these symbols. I can't help but think about, you know, beings that are off the planet looking down or looking sideways to another dimension at us and just shaking their heads and saying, you know, capable of such beauty and such charm and such terror and horror all at the same time in one race.
But then again, it's because of our godlike capacity. It's because of our ability to exercise a free will, but not having an understanding, but looking towards humanity for a type of wisdom, as opposed to looking to the heavens for true wisdom, which is where we get everything that we have, and learning to act like God. In whose image we were created, and choosing to speak the kind of things that we want in our life, as opposed to just, you know, loose lips sink ships, you know, just walking around and just spewing, you know, death-oriented words that again result in an environment of death and sickness. So again, it's because we were given that capacity and we do have creative power. See, Satan, Lucifer, has no creative power.
Right.
The only way he can get anything done is to do it through us.
Because
we do have creative power. We prove it every day.
And so he vicariously, either him or his followers, try to use our ability, our capabilities, to meet his ends.
Exactly.
And I guess the joy that he gets out of it is, you know, look what I've done with your creation. You sent it down here, and I have scooped it up and claimed it for my own.
That's right. And in somehow, some way, towards the bitter end, which I hope is just a long time from now, he's actually able to delude the human race into taking up arms against God at his return. And somehow deludes mankind into thinking they can somehow even fight him.
Well, you know, I see the grand division. Anyone that doesn't see it, I think, you know, may just possibly be in a state of denial, because the division, the lines of battle lines that are being drawn between those that see where we came from and where we are destined to go, and those that want to prevent that, or those that deny that in some way, those battle lines are being drawn as we speak. And one of the things that that is so fascinating and terrible all at the same time is that our technology is doubling now at a documented rate every 10 months. And I think that that rate will accelerate even more when the next generation of computing power comes out. And when we lay binary power apart and aside, and we go to tertiary or quaternary communications, the clock speeds that we have in our computers right now will seem like an ancient digital watch technology compared to what we have. 2.8 gigahertz clock speed will mean nothing. We will be talking in dozens of teraflops at that time. Programming will change, languaging will change, imaging will change, and space travel will change. We will be able to travel very shortly to other planets in a fraction of the time that we're planning on doing it now. I know at the Johnson Science Correspondent, there was a hyperspace engine that was recently written about making interstellar space travel a reality by literally flying into other dimensions. That motor is being experimented with right now, and if it's successful, it will cut the amount of time to travel to Mars to a mere 3 hours. Well, that really brings
Wow.
the universe home. They're saying in the article that we could travel to the nearest star system in 8 days. Well, that opens up everything to us. I mean, we're really, if we think we're prideful now that we can do great things, just wait. The next dozen years are going to be amazing. In our next hour, what I would really like to talk about, on your website you have a link to a thing called the Rapture Index. And I get people from time to time, we talk about this. I don't really get too much into the religion of it because I don't really understand completely the concept of rapture very clearly, I think. It's kind of a post-biblical concept, even though the roots of it come from the Bible. But I want to understand how everything's kind of gelling together, and maybe answer the question, have we been here before as a race and maybe made too many mistakes to make it? Anyway, that's what we're going to discuss in the final hour with our guest, Ken Parson. But I have a few more commercials I've got to do, and we'll do a 43-second musical break. This is X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. And we'll be back right after these commercials. Did you know that 11 of the 12 cents of footprints on the moon were made by Eagle Scouts? It's true. But very soon, men and women will be doing the real moonwalk. But just so we don't forget, the first footprint on the moon has been replicated in a limited edition plaque that would make the perfect gift for a court of honor for your Eagle Scout. Maybe you need something special for your office or your library at home. This high-quality plaque can add that something special that lets people know how excited you are that we are returning to the moon. Visit Countdown Creations at X Squared Radio today and order your limited edition First Step on the Moon plaque. And you own an inkjet printer, right? I used to buy my inkjet cartridges at a national chain store, which shall remain unnamed, for about $35 per cartridge, plus tax. The color and black cartridges together ran around $80. Well, no more. I discovered a great place to buy printer supplies at 123 Inkjets. They not only provide excellent quality and fast shipping, every time I buy, I get a chance to win a free printer. In April, they are giving away 5 printers a day. In May, the same thing. In June, it'll probably even be better than that. So stop paying those high prices. Visit 123 Inkjet at X Squared Radio today and start saving money. If you're like me, you love wildlife. I love to walk in the woods and just watch animals moving about. And there is a company out there called Wildlife Gifts, and they've got the most beautiful replicas and artwork of wildlife. They've got everything from pandas to fish to eagles to horses in all sizes and price ranges. It doesn't matter what animal you love the most, they have the art for you. So visit Wildlife Gifts at X Squared Radio for that special someone today. Now, there is some place you should visit before the end of this month. The Horizon Project is probably the most important examination of future events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website very soon. I can't give you all the details here, but I can tell you that the first DVD in the 6-part series is now available for your purchase at $5 off. This series will no doubt be airing on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important video productions you will ever see. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today and see what I'm talking about. You know, we have revealed to you the ancient predictions that natural disasters are going to increase in power and frequency in these times. We might not always have the National Weather Service or the Emergency Broadcasting Service, so you might want to get your hands on some of the best weather reporting instruments around. By visiting Wind and Weather at X Squared Radio and pick up something that might be useful. They also have the neatest gifts for your favorite people who like things for the outdoors or for their meditation garden. So check out Wind and Weather at X Squared Radio. And we will be back after this 43-second musical interlude. Welcome back to X Squared Radio Earth Explorers. This is Brooks Agnew. My guest tonight is Ken Parson. We have had a fantastic 2 hours. At one point I thought we were going to grow apart, but it turns out we have a common understanding and maybe a different perception of some scriptural points. But other than that, I think we're right on together. One of the things that we talked about in our first hour was the definite evidence in the scriptures that there were races before Adam, and that there were races spoken of that were concurrent with Adam that maybe aren't described in great detail by the modern clergy, but nevertheless are well described in the Bible. And of course we talked about some extra biblical sources that have a little clearer picture of some of the conditions during that time. In our final hour, if you go to Ken Parson's website, he has a website, I believe it's warzonewinner.com, right?
That's correct.
And you need to go to that website because he has got some fantastic DVD and CD lectures and courses that you can take. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've got available now for our listeners?
We have one of the probably more popular teachings right now is of the Magog invasion, because we really see it coming together strong in the world right now. It's a CD that was done probably 2 or 3 years ago, but since then, all the countries that we described as coming into an alliance against Israel have come into an alliance against Israel, you know, since that time. And one of the things that we look at, of course, we have, you know, we talk about everything, you know, the Book of Revelation. We discuss UFOs. We have a CD called Convergence, which simply takes what we see in the Bible with what we know today and what we've seen today and just puts it all together, kind of like what you and I have been doing, you know, just getting rid of the divisions between all these camps and pulling out what is common, and, you know, where we can all kind of agree, you know, on a certain point and see where it's all headed the same direction and show where the Bible literally is on it. And it's one of the things that you know, we constantly say, prophecy in the Bible is more to let us know where we are more than what's going to happen in the future. It kind of lets us know where we are at the time. And there's so much evidence of prophecy in the Bible that has come to pass already that gives so much credibility to knowing what's going to come. You know, there was, you know, those that really studied prophecy, especially during World War II, when people were saying, you know, a lot of Christians were saying, you know, Hitler is the Antichrist. Yet we had those that were looking in Scripture saying, you know, he looks that way, but it's not, can't be the case, because Israel is not a nation. And, of course, you know, people would say, well, you know, what's the chances of that ever happening? And then it happens.
Yeah,
you know,
we were,
you know,
we didn't
Christians
think about
that. Exactly. They would study and start talking about a world government. You know, what are the chances of that? What are the chances of that? Well, then the League of Nations comes along, and then the United Nations comes along. And then we're talking about Europe being the revived Roman Empire, or the Roman Empire reviving itself, and that there would be at the final days, a global empire that's run really by the European Union and a single currency.
When I think about that, just a little bit off subject, when I think about that, originally we thought, okay, the League of Nations is going to be it, and then it turned out to be emasculated, and then the UN comes along, and certainly it's got the money, it's got the location, it's got the press behind them, but, you know, they're largely ineffectual.
That's right. And we're going to continue to see their decline.
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily mean that globalism isn't happening, because I know in the industry that has provided my living most of my life, it's definitely gone global. In fact, if you're not global, you can't even do business with them. So I think it's maybe the economic globalism that's seeming to pull us in.
Well, really, and you really just sort of made another point, not to just dive so heavily into it, but we also see in Revelation a description of the Internet falling under the guidelines of what John referred to as Mystery Babylon. And, you know, for years, everybody wondered what that mystery was. I mean, why was it Mystery Babylon? Why wasn't he just calling it Babylon?
Mm-hmm.
And it was because, you know, that was the mystery. What he was seeing was a cyber city. That's where the globalization is. That's where the elimination of languages being a barrier is happening. You know, that's where buying and selling is happening. You know, and ultimately, you know, we see a mark which will, in essence, be your Internet access. You won't be able to buy or sell unless you have that access, which will come through pledging allegiance to a global dictator. And we see all of these things happening. But when we look earlier, just looking at the evidence of prophecy, just exactly what you were talking about, where our technology is doubling every 10 months, and that's before we even start getting into some of this newer stuff that you're talking about, which we hardly can wrap our mind around. But we look in Daniel, and he makes the comment when he's telling Daniel, after he's telling the prophecies about the revived Roman Empire and everything else, then he says, "But you, Daniel, close up and seal the words of the scroll until the time of the end, when many will go here and there, and they will increase in knowledge." And it speaks about a time that the whole world will be mobile, you know, moving around, and that knowledge will be increasing. And we're definitely seeing that now. You know, we see other evidences. You know, probably the strongest evidence is the fact that there was no crucifixions on this planet until the Roman Empire came along. And yet, in Psalm 22, 1,000 years, it was 1,000 B.C., 1,000 years before Christ, you know, hit the ground as a man, and it literally gave a description of a crucifixion.
It sure did.
Yeah. It says, a band of evil men has encircled me. They have pierced my hands and my feet. I can count on my bones. People stare and gloat over me. They divide my garments among them and cast lots for my clothing.
And
that was 1,000 years before that time. So when we start looking at, again, it's all the stuff has happened. You know, the one constant the denominator of who has been right when people are saying what's going to happen, it's been those people that have really stuck close to what we see in Scripture prophetically. It always ends up happening. The cashless society, you know, all of it.
Well, it isn't. I mean, yes, it's a cashless society, but it's the ultimate alchemy, really. You've created value out of absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
And, you know, we thought that paper money was pretty much worthless. I mean, at least it has the magical talismans on it from the Templars that originally designed the banking system and dabbled and finally perfected alchemy. I mean, look, we take a piece of paper that's worth absolutely nothing and we make it worth a dollar.
That's right.
And when we can exchange our labor for it and then turn around and send it electronically across the planet and buy a bottle of wine and have it shipped to our house if we want to. But, it's the ultimate alchemy. But it's not really cashless society as it is electronic alchemy.
And and what we're looking at is ultimately, though, that cash will be gone.
You know, and of course, my generation, your generation, we say, oh, gee, that'll never happen. I'm not going to give up my cash. There's no way I'm going to. But I look at my kids, you know, all they need is a debit card.
Yep.
They're good to go from Taco Bell to
Coke
furniture
machine.
Store to buying Coke machines. Everything is going to that debit card. And so, you know, I unfortunately had my account cleaned out one time by identity theft. Somebody got my number and then I guess created a PIN number, and somewhere in Amsterdam they hit my account every 5 or 6 minutes for $303.21 and drained it.
Yep, I had that happen too.
So, it's not that uncommon. So now we have, at least with cash, no one can steal my identity. I've got cash, I've got value in my pocket, but with electronics they can steal your identity. And so you link the electronic money with an irrefutable form of electronic identification, and now you have the perfect system. And we think, well, gee, that smacks of the mark of the beast. I'll never agree to that. But then you think about what it would take to sell an idea like that. It wouldn't take much.
No, it sure wouldn't.
All you'd have to do is come out as a government. Maybe it's the federal government of the European Union. You come out and you say, look, you know, terrorism is a really big problem, and if we can eliminate cash and stop this identity theft, we can track people, and we'll be able to keep you safe. And so, you know, we want you to take this chip, or at least your kids. Now it's an edict or a law. Every child that's born in our country is going to have an RFID chip embedded in them.
We're so close right now. I mean, even with the Real ID Act of 08, you know, and the federal ID cards, you know, having an RFID.
Right.
You know, it's going to be, you know, it's just one step at a time.
Well,
but
God.
Even though everybody, let's say another situation like 9/11 comes along, you know, the idea is now we can zero in on these people. If these people had been broadcasting a frequency, we could have zeroed in on them and probably saved a lot of lives. And so the first time something like that happens, even with the Real ID card, you know, they'll track in and they'll think, well, we found somebody, but it's nothing but a wallet because it got blown, you know, a half mile away or something. So now the only answer is going to be to embed them. That's the way that we're going to keep you safe. So if something like this happens, we can find you. If you get trapped in a mine, we know right where you're at.
Well, I know that I don't really know why, but it is illegal now in the United States of America to have any kind of farm animal that doesn't have an RFID chip in them. You can own an alpaca or a cow or a horse or even a dog legally in this country without an RFID tag in them.
You know, there's whole schoolhouses full of kids that would have laughed at you had you told them that just 20 years ago.
Well, that's exactly right. But I'll tell you, when the first Amber Alert that's sent up and a kidnapped child is recovered before it's murdered, because it has an RFID chip in its neck, and that is going to sell the program.
Well, it's selling it now. But you're right, even more so once they have an actual precedent that's been set.
One of the things, the link that's on your website, it's called the Rapture Index. And when I opened it up and I looked at it, it looks like there's about maybe 50 or close to 60 different points in the scriptures. It talks about false Christs, occult, unemployment, inflation, debt and trade, Gog, which is in parentheses called Russia, Persia, which is Iran, false prophet, drought, famine, civil rights, wild weather, earthquakes. All of these things have kind of an index number on there. Can you help us understand that so when people go to your website and click on this link, they can get the most out of this?
It's basically a system that was set up giving numeric value to how many times something may have been spoken about in Scripture. The earthquakes in various places being one of those things. Obviously, the world government being one of those things. The weather, which we know is going to just absolutely freak out towards the end, and we're seeing that.
Oh, yeah.
Right down to global warming. It even says in Revelation that there's one point where it says the sun is going to give power, is the power to burn men. You know, that the sun will actually get so powerful it'll just be burning people. So when we see all of these things, but they're just simply given, the war on terror really spiked it all up. The Patriot Act really spiked it all up. So it just is basically trying to give you, for all intents and purposes, on a scale of 1 to 10, of course it uses in the hundreds of a scale of 1 to 10, how close we are to an actual rapture occurring. And that's really what we're seeing there. And it goes up and then it goes down because things will kind of smooth out. You know, it's at one point things go to fever pitch, like right before the Gulf War. It got extremely high. You know, going into Iraq, it got extremely high. But then, you know, things a lot of times will smooth out and it'll just sort of kind of coast down a little bit. Just almost like the national terror alert going, you know, from orange to red or this type of a thing, only from a spiritual standpoint.
One of the most significant things that I noticed when I was working at a large plant, and they had TV monitors in every area, which we used to disseminate quality information. But in 1991, when the Gulf War happened, they began airing CNN on all these stations during the lunch period. And one of the things that I noticed is right about that time, news went from news at 11 to news 24 hours a day. I mean, I caught myself up in it. I got home from work, and the first thing that I did is turn on CNN. I got to see what's happening over there. You know, I heard it's going to be the mother of all battles. And, you know, all of a sudden we were in 24-hour news. And now when I get home from work, the first thing that goes on in the news, it kind of plays in the background in my house. And the thing that I've noticed is now all of the information is real time. You know, every little car chase, we don't have to wait for news at 11.
No.
Everything is real time now, and that puts us directly in touch with the people that are pushing the buttons.
That's right.
Around the country, around the world for that matter. You really don't have to do anything that terrible to get on 24-hour news channel, and you're going to be repeated because, well, we ran out of news today, so we kind of had to repeat that again and again and again and again until something better happens. So you've got armies of correspondents out there with cameras and microphones in hand looking for something to put on the news. And I can't help but remember a situation where there was a man named Hearst, and it was a period of time when I guess press was starting to really flex its muscle in politics. And one of the things that we had was a conflict with Spain, but it wasn't really gelling into a conflict. And we had a ship that had a boiler explode, and it was an accident. But Hearst took the photos of that explosion and created a conflict between Spain and America. And literally, I think, through his quote-unquote yellow journalism, started the Spanish-American War. And that was with a newspaper. So
yeah, talking about William Randolph?
Yeah. I think about how not just policy, but social mores and even international relations are being manipulated by the press, real time.
Well, certainly public opinion is.
Well, sure, and you know, public opinion is elections, and elections are representatives, and representatives are government, and that's how it's being affected.
That's right, and when you really follow the paper trail or follow the money, and you see who owns the networks, you know, it gives you a new perspective on really what is news. You know, when we're watching maybe a major news network, and they're doing a news story about a particular film that's coming out, but then when you research, you realize that that film is actually been produced by the same parent company, but yet it's being promoted as though it's news, when in actuality it's advertisement being done by the news media. The news, man, I've always relied so heavily on it, and I remember, like you said, every night right around 10:30 you had to wait for the news, and then you only had three channels to choose from, whereas now it's 24 hours a day, and you can watch it whenever you want. But whereas, too, you know, a kid could sit in front of the news, and, you know, it'd be okay. But now, you don't even know what's going to come across that news story. I mean, it's almost like the news has to be rated at some point.
Oh, my goodness. And then, depending on which channel you select or which program you select, you're going to get not just the news, but you're going to get the ideology of the person that's doing the report, because you're going to get a slant like never before. I mean, they don't just report the news, they make the news practically.
True. And then all of a sudden one day you think you got it figured out, and you're shaking your head because now you got Murdoch hosting a fundraiser for Hillary, and you're like, where did that come from?
Well, I'll tell you, the reason I bring this up is that the powers that are at work on our planet, and I'm still not so sure that some of these fallen angels aren't still here. We just don't worship them as gods anymore because we're a more advanced society now. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the leaders or those that want to be leaders are not still making that same exchange.
That's right.
You remember when you talked about that exchange where the powers that be gave mortal women for the pleasure and breeding of these fallen angels in exchange for technology.
That's right. Access to the population in exchange for technology. Using the theory of the good of the many outweighs the need of the few.
You know, is that still occurring today?
In my opinion, it absolutely is.
All right. So somewhere behind the research and development arm of governments or super companies, I call them, you know, maybe I don't want to call them oil companies, because oil companies have one vested interest, and that's to keep the entire planet addicted to oil. They're not going to let solar technology or hydrogen technology or gravity wave technology or dynamo technology, they're not going to let any of that come into mass production, because it takes away from their revenue, their macroeconomic control of the planet. But there are, I think, controlling, I don't want to call them a secret society or anything like that, but it seems to me that there are controlling entities on this planet that have access to technology that didn't originate here. And they're sort of bleeding it out to the point where the forces stay balanced. But before too long, these super forces are going to come against each other. And this alignment that Ken is talking about against Israel, which I guess it could not have happened prior to 1948, because there was no Israel.
That's right.
Unless you want to go back 2,000 years, and even that was emasculated being occupied by Rome. Now we do have an Israel, and we have the lone superpower on the earth, the United States of America, aligned with Israel. So basically Israel is us, too.
And one of the things that you'll be seeing change, and has already begun to change, and when we start looking at the forces over in Israel, not to pull too far away from what we're talking about, is one of the code words that you'll really want to invest attention in when you hear it now is nuclear-free Middle East. And what that is code for Israel needs to get rid of their nuclear weapons. Because the argument that's being made now is, hey, Iran, the only reason Iran needs nuclear weapons is to protect itself from Israel, who has them. Now, the official position is that Israel does not have nuclear weapons, but everybody knows that they actually do. I think they're even listed as number six, as sixth largest nuclear nation. So now you've got Russia and China and Iran and the Arab states, the Persians and Arabs, that are saying, hey, Israel, United Nations, we need some security resolutions against Israel. If they get rid of their nukes, we'll give up all of our nuclear ambitions. But they need to get rid of their nukes. And when we signed the security resolution against Iran, we actually allowed to be put into the language, the United States did, that we supported a nuclear-free Middle East. In other words, the United States is saying, we endorse this, that they get rid of their nuclear weapons for this roadmap to peace. So when we start seeing inspectors go to Israel, and Israel starts doing the exact same thing that Saddam Hussein did, the same thing that Iran is doing now, it's going to look awful hypocritical of the United States. So we're really painting ourselves into a corner here. And then with any resolutions, and Israel not going along with it, and they're not letting inspectors in, and they're doing this and that, now all of a sudden you've got Russia and Iran and Turkey and Germany and this entire Magog alliance that's going to be looking at what the United States did with Iraq. It's saying, hey, look, that was a precedent. You know, we can do it. They did it. We can do it with Israel. We don't need your permission to go in to back up this United Nations resolution.
And
so,
you know,
in other words, that's really where it's headed, is all eyes are going to be on Israel. It's exactly like we see in Zechariah. It's exactly the way that we see this entire prophetic map zeroes in on these countries coming against Israel. But again, the United States, for some reason, backs this nuclear-free Middle East thing, and that's where we're headed. But now, as far as this other, you know, the technology, the kind of technology that we're seeing, the one-world government, you have to remember, the best way to unite mankind is to give us a common enemy. And the best common enemy would be something from some other world to unite mankind.
Do you? Well, now, I want to talk about that just a little bit, because the reason I brought this up is I asked the question, do you think past super civilizations have reached the point that we are, where we've got, you know, weapons of mass destruction, we've got the ability to deliver them against one another, and we've got a dislike for one another? But this time, I think we have the ability to communicate with one another, which is quite different than in times past. Usually we were victims of propaganda, and we, you know, grabbed up our banners and our battle axes, and we headed out against each other because our leaders gave us one side of the story. And the Civil War in the United States was fought just that way. We had Americans fighting Americans because government was unable to communicate with both sides and say, whoa, wait. All we really want to do is preserve the Union. We don't want to come down there and fight you, and you don't want to fight us. I think a little bit of diplomacy, we could have avoided that war. But now we've got instant and universal communication. We've got the ability to commit commerce between one nation and another instantly, real time. We have a chance here to maybe supersede this innate conflict that we have. Every time we mount up to sizable population, we fight each other to the death. I'm thinking that maybe we have the chance to make the metamorphosis into the new race of man that doesn't have to do this. Yes, it's predicted that all of this is going to occur, but all those predictions in the scriptures are conditional. The reason we've been given those predictions and those prophecies is so that we will turn from them. We are admonished to repent and turn away and put our eyes single to God. I'm thinking that maybe we can overcome it this time because we've got this rapture index. We know who Gog and Magog are. We know who the forces are and what the conditions are going to look like. And maybe we can step away from the fight and maybe supersede it. But the thing that you brought up here at the end kind of changes all that. That we are going to maybe unite together against an extraterrestrial enemy. That would sure bring us together, you know. We're now not fighting for the nation, where it's a little bit like Independence Day. We're fighting for the race of man.
That's correct.
So, but is that mentioned in these predictions, or are
yes,
we?
It is. It's mentioned in Revelation.
All right, let's open that up then. There's a chance that maybe instead of facing each other across the battle line, Israel and its allies against everyone else and their allies, and we're going to nuke each other into a parking lot again and be picking berries again for the next 20,000 years.
Well, in reality, what we see now, what you're saying is right. We have the capability to do that, but it doesn't seem as though that's going to happen. A couple of things that we need to keep in mind. First of all, every point that you made is accurate, coming from the culture of the United States. You know, how we view things as Americans.
Right.
But no matter how great the communication is, we still have certain ideologies that do not see the same thing we do. I mean, we have some governments that literally want to establish Sharia Muslim law around the entire globe.
Well, I understand that.
Yeah.
But you have government is over a people. Government is not a people. I know Iranians. I've worked with them all my life. They're intelligent, gorgeous, creative, hardworking people. And I don't see one of them aligning themselves with this nut over there.
Well, and it's the same thing. It's the same thing over in with the Palestinians. You know, we have. You know, I got to sit down and speak with a Palestinian. He was just a great Christian, and you get a totally different perspective of the general population themselves. But the general population really are not the ones that are ultimately making these governmental decisions. I mean,
what?
That's really the challenge that these other countries they rationalize terrorism because they're saying that in a country like America, you know, they're hitting general population, they're hitting innocent civilians, but in their minds, we're not innocent civilians because we elect our leaders. So it's really our fault that we have the type of government over here that they don't like, so they see us as the enemy.
Well, at least the government sees us as the enemy. I might be looking at this through a 1960s kind of innocence, but what would happen if government threw a war and nobody came? You know, Washington, D.C. is not the United States. What goes on inside that beltway is a joke compared to what goes out here in real life.
That's right. But on the other hand, if the chances of people just saying, you know, the government saying, okay, we're going to war, they don't just come to your door and give you a choice. In other words, if they hit, well, look at, you know, National Guardsmen is a perfect example. I mean, they didn't sign up to go over in 120-degree heat, you know what I'm saying, and knock down doors in the middle of Baghdad, you know, looking for insurgents.
And you know what? I don't think they would do that if someone hadn't flown airplanes into our buildings. I mean, they invaded a Kuwait, which was an act of aggression.
That's right.
Our president said, that's not going to stand. We're going to go defend Kuwait. Well, that's an honorable thing. Let's go defend Kuwait. And we did. Did we invade Baghdad? No, we didn't. When the mission was over, we came home.
Uh-huh.
Now someone comes over here, well, actually, maybe 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 times attacks the United States without an answer, and finally they poke their finger in our eye one too many times, and woke us up, and we went over there and kicked some butt.
That's right.
You know, we were patriotic about it. We were fired up about it. I tried to buy an American flag a few days after 9/11. Couldn't find one.
That's right.
They were all bought up, and
that's exactly right.
Everywhere.
And that's the point. Is that all happened irrespective of how the populations in these other countries might have felt about it? Those attacks still happened. It still culminated in what, you know, we're dealing with today. In other words, there's just a certain inevitability to certain governments and certain mindsets that they have that they're not going to back down from. And that not even the idea for globalism is it stops wars. You know, in other words, perfect example is, you know, when we're buying so much stuff from China, why would they want to go to war and disrupt such a strong economy? You know, we're under the impression that there's some type of protection or some kind of a safety net there by this globalist, you know, type of an economy. And there is a certain amount of that. But at the end of the day, it does come down to ideology. And that's what we end up seeing culminate in any type of a global type war that we see.
But
what we're looking at today is the tension. And who would have thought that this type of a warfare that we're looking at is going to be completely centered around religion, of all things?
Well, not only that, this war is completely different than any other war, even the war in Kosovo.
That's right.
because we didn't fight a people. We didn't fight an army. We fought a government, directly at the government. The only people that we targeted, right down to the square meter, were the people that were associated with the government. We didn't attack the people. We didn't go against an army. We went against a specific group, the Taliban. We hunted them down and we broke them as badly as we could without bothering the people. We didn't bomb hospitals and schools and roads and water treatment places and power companies. We went straight after them. We located them and fought them directly. That's different than any other war that's ever been fought.
That's right. Well, we had food shipments we were dropping into the people so that they could still eat.
Right. Right. So that this kind of warfare isn't described in the Bible. The kind of warfare that's described in the Bible is apocalyptic.
Well, not all the way through. Maybe when we start looking at Revelation, but what we need to remember about what happens in Revelation is it is after a type of worldwide catastrophe that we end up seeing, which is what you talked about earlier, which is a rapture, as well as some type of a nuclear exchange. And we've got this last seven-year period where all bets are off and everything changes. You know, we really don't see China, and that's one of the reasons I can say it. I mean, I don't see us going to war with China, not before this, what we call the last 7 years or the Great Tribulation. We've been in a time of tribulation since the beginning, I mean, since the fall of man, but we've got this last 7 years that we see in Revelation that we need to contend with. Daniel also speaks about this last 7 years. One of the wars leading up to that is this Magog invasion, which is what we see getting itself put together, at least apparently it would look as though it's putting itself together right now over there. But once we get past the ideology, if there is, for example, you know, Ronald Reagan was woke up in the middle of the night because an asteroid had entered the atmosphere and had exploded, but it had sent off certain alarms that made us put us under the impression that we were under an attack. So he was woke up in the middle of the night. We come to find out it wasn't a real attack. We just thought there was. Israel has sent their planes out hot because of meteorites exploding in the atmosphere and putting them under the impression that they were under attack. So it doesn't necessarily take a psycho with his finger on a button to start one of these things. You know, the right asteroid in the right place could impact the Earth and put a country under the impression that they were under nuclear attack when in fact they weren't. All you need is a couple, you know, then you've got the rogue scenario too, you know, where pop, you know, the suitcase nuclear bomb thing, you know, in the ports and this sort of a thing. But when Jesus speaks about this rapture, he seems to put it where it's coinciding, not this like what we hear a lot of, which is, and for those that may not know what rapture is, to put it in political terms, it's God doing like what we do when we go to war against a country. He's basically saying mankind is literally, he is at war against the dark forces of Satan, and that mankind is, in essence, he is getting ready to go to war against them, you know, because of the types of things that are happening on the planet. So what he does is we are ambassadors. Those of us that follow Christ are ambassadors, so to speak. And we are literally the embassy that gets cleared out, kind of like before we go to war against the country, we pull everybody out of our embassies. So he literally takes the Christians out of the planet, is off the planet at that particular time. Kind of like what you talked about, you know, with Enoch, the way Enoch walked with God, then he just was no more. He didn't even die. He just went.
Translated off the planet.
Right. And so we have that type of a scenario. The misconception is that this is going to be a standalone event where all of a sudden these people just disappear and that's all there is to it. I mean, other than, you know, if a person's driving a car and they're gone, the car may hit something, or if a pilot is flying a plane and he's gone, the plane could crash. You've got that scenario. But it also seems to be coupled with some type of either an asteroid impact or also a limited nuclear exchange. In other words, it's not just a standalone event. It is coupled with a couple other catastrophic events also. And that's where we really pick up in the book of Revelation, what John was saying, is picking up after this cataclysmic event, after this last seal, where we see all of a sudden 200 million man Asian troops coming through. He even saw the colors, which is yellow, red, and blue, which is yellow and red is the colors of the Chinese flag. Blue could be United Nations blue. And so we see this army that's moving in towards the oil fields at this particular time. Then you see a lot of non-lethal technology, crowd control, which is, you know, these helicopters that he gives a description of, again, a first century man trying to describe 21st century events, and we seem to see all of a sudden crowd control and literally a government that is trying to get control of the world again after just all havoc breaks loose on the planet. So, in other words, the political situation after this event, or these events that we're talking about, will be way different than what we're looking at in the world today. You know, everything that you just said is correct, and it's a great possibility. And depending on the amount of time that we have until something like this actually happens, you know, Revelation, it also makes the comment that there will be no more delays. In other words, it kind of is saying that there have been some delays. So it could be that we do end up delaying, you know, what ultimately is the inevitable.
Hmm.
But
so,
at the point that something like this happens, then all bets are off. Everything as we know it is going to be different.
So it is going to be a combination of extraterrestrial activity, that is to say, asteroids or comets striking the planet, or these small meteorites coming in and taking one person in the field and leaving the other, and that instability that this cataclysmic event creates offers an opportunity for an opportunistic army to make this invasion. Because, you know, frankly, I look at it right now and I look at the intelligence capabilities that we have from space. We may have weapons abilities from space. We don't really understand all that right now. It, I think, is impossible to have that kind of war today.
Well, see, in Zechariah talks about that when all the nations are gathered against Israel, that he's going to blind their horses with blindness. And we've got to remember that that would be a type of military technology or military forces. As a matter of fact, what would happen, blinding their horses with blindness, when all the countries of the earth are gathered against Jerusalem, this is in chapter 12 of Zechariah,
mm-hmm.
And if you lose your satellite technology or you end up with this type of a warfare, then you're blinded. If you don't have your GPS and you don't have of these things, when you're so dependent upon technology, it would be possible for what we see here, whereas I will strike your horses with blindness. Where the it reads exactly like this: on that day, when all the nations of the earth are gathered against her, I will make Jerusalem an immovable rock for all the nations. All who try to move it will injure themselves. On that day I will strike every horse with panic and its rider with madness, declares the Lord. I will keep a watchful eye over the house of Judah, but I will blind all the horses of the nations, when the leaders of Judah will say in their hearts, the people of Jerusalem are strong. And then it kind of goes on. So it's talking about an army that's literally blinded, which could be their technology.
Yeah, if you took out our looking glass capabilities, our GPS, our drones flying up in the sky, delivering real-time pictures to the tanks so they know exactly who's the enemy and who's not, these radio and video and GPS-guided weapons that we've been able to drop down cooling shafts of buildings so precisely in past wars, if we're not able to do that, or enemies of Israel are not able to do that, they're going to be, you know, panicked and disarray.
That's correct. We also see in Revelation, we talk about the non-lethal technology. Now, we looked at right after this event that we're talking about, and we seem to see oil fields on fire. I won't go into all the scripture, but that's where we're at when I'm going to read this to you. Remember, there's been a dramatic loss of life, or a lot of loss of life.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got the non-lethal technology, crowd control. It says, and the agony they suffered was like that of the sting of a scorpion. When it strikes a man during those days, men will seek death, but will not find it. They will long to die, but death will elude them. But the locusts looked like horses prepared for battle on their heads. They wore something like crowns of gold, and their faces resembled human faces. What he's looking at is something that it looks as though they're locusts, but they have the face of a man. And he has something that looks like a crown, or a military-type helmet.
Like
their hair was like women's hair. The propellers on top spinning, and their teeth were like lion's teeth, and you've got like the warheads. They had breastplates like breastplates of iron, and here it says, and the sound of their wings was like the thundering of many horses and chariots rushing into battle.
Mm. Sounds like the sonic boom off the front of the rotors as the helicopter is coming towards you.
So this is the kind of things that we see, and so it's, again, when we look at just other prophecies that have been fulfilled and are undeniable, and then we couple that with just prophecy that we are seeing coming to pass now, you know, with one world government, at least the mechanisms being put in place that will be necessary for that one world government to be able to exercise its rule. It's really kind of an uncanny thing, but I'm with you. You know, I pray for a unity, and I pray for a putting off of any kind of a war. You know, we pray for the quick coming of the Lord Jesus, but what we don't pray for is, you know, a lot of war and a lot of death. It's just that seems to be the inevitable event that seems to have been able to elude us all through time, and now it's you know, a war could start without us even really wanting to start it. You know, sometimes the quickness of communications, like you were talking about, could in some cases do more harm than good, because at least the old way you had some kind of a cooling down period.
Yeah, the panic could.
Yeah, but now, I mean, you know, two leaders could lose their temper just right over the phone.
Well, my hope is that because of our ability to communicate and our desire to preserve life and to survive as a race, I would really like to see us explore other planets. I would like to see us gain the ability to explore our galaxy and explore beyond the galaxy and bring that technology home so that, you know, we have the ability to light our homes and feed our families and protect ourselves from disease. You know, all of these things are the wonderful, beautiful, promising things of the human race. And I guess it's not that I lose hope, but maybe I get a little bit frustrated in the sense that it seems every religion, Muslim or Hindu or Christianity, it doesn't matter. We've got this apocalyptic view of our existence that we're all going to be, you know, yanked apart and raptured and destroyed and burned as stubble, and we're going to be, you know, having dams burst and wiping us out. There has to be a way for the race.
Well, see, and all of that information is really comes to us through preceding generations, all through time.
Right.
It's what we talked about early in the show, where ultimately these original races or original civilizations. In Ecclesiastes, it says there's nothing new under the sun. I mean, if it's here, it's been here before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who can look at something and say, hey, there's something new? Now, Ecclesiastes even say that there's absolutely nothing that's here for the first time. But we know that just the first Adamite race before the fall, you know, all of these, once the fall entered in and death entered in and we lost our dimensional capacity and we lost, you know, we weren't going to be living forever anymore, we would soon begin to die, at least natural deaths, and our spirits would go on existing, however, but that we all ended up, and all of the little splintered groups apparently ended up drawing the same conclusions from what happened at that point. They were all given the same information. It's just kind of come across in different ways just over the generations. And that's where, you know, God in His providence, you know, has arranged for the writings to be preserved, you know, for this day and time, you know, with evidence, you know, not just saying, hey, it's not so much as this blind faith. It's literally, hey, look, read this and just see what's happening out there and see if it's not coming to pass.
Well,
you know,
I'm
good
not,
prophecy as well is stuff that doesn't look like it's too much fun.
No,
but like
not.
The prophecy of Israel, that's an incredible prophecy that they would come together again as a nation.
Sure, and the fact that their existence would polarize the planet the way that it has. But,
mm-hmm.
You know, as we stated in the first hours, we're not alone in the universe. There are others that, you know, want us to succeed. Do you think that there are off-worlders that will visit, that will help us, that will, you know, either maybe step in and say, all right, before this war gets started, you all should know we have enough technology to wipe you all out, and we don't want you to fight. You know, is there a possibility?
If anything happened of that nature, then it would be our responsibility to find out where they stood first. Now, if they came and one of the first words out of their mouth is, Jesus was not the Son of God, He was a great prophet. My first thing is, hey, why are you going to travel, you know, a trillion light years just to have the first thing out of your mouth tell us that Jesus is not God?
Exactly.
If any race of being shows up and tells us anything other than, hey, Jesus is the Son of God, then we have to understand that those are more likely than not, absolutely, undeniably, fallen angels trying to pull the exact same stunt as they pulled back in Genesis 6. And they're trying to delude people into believing that God himself, it's one of the only things that explains what we see towards the very end of the Bible, towards the, you know, after the tribulation, before the thousand-year millennial reign, when God actually comes back to the planet, yet mankind gathers for war against him. It's as though there is a race. What we see is a group of beings that claim to be from another place, that have all wisdom, and they're here to give us technology and tell us, hey, look, we're the good guys, but we need to tell you there's some bad guys coming, and we're going to help you protect yourself from them, and put us under the impression that this whatever this is coming from the sky is an enemy force and not the creator that put everything into motion from the very beginning.
You know, I have heard almost that exact same message. And it seems as though modern theater writers, and we call it science fiction, but gosh, everything that happens in science fiction almost happens in reality anymore.
It's almost like there is no real science fiction.
I know.
Since our little cell phones are just like the Star Trek communicators, I think that every time I call somebody, I'm going to ask to be beamed up.
Well, I flip open my phone just exactly the way Captain Kirk does.
Yeah, me too.
But my point is that, do you think that the population of the Earth is being prepared in that way? That, you know, we are about to have global first contact, and those that come are going to say, you know, we come from, you know, far away, and we've got technology here, and we want to see you survive as a race. So here's the things we want to do, but, you know, you need to know that there are some coming after us that are not the good guys, and we need to help prepare the Earth for this intergalactic conflict. I've heard that exact same message somewhere.
And we see that exact scenario right here in the Bible. And as far as the possibility of that happening, we have learned, I know I have learned, that to when I wake up in the morning and I haven't had a TV on or anything, and I push that button, and that dark screen starts to come to life, I'm not going to be amazed by anything that comes across that screen first thing.
Exactly.
It could be anything. An asteroid could have hit the other side of the planet, a nuke could have gone off, or some space beings landed at the White House, and they're here to give us all wisdom. I mean, and nothing would surprise me now.
Well, it is definitely a different day and time in which we live. And I think mankind has, as a popular thing, separated himself from his divine roots. I mean, look, even in this country, the United States of America, founded by God-fearing men, our government, our documents, our constitution infused with a relationship to God and Jesus Christ. But now all that's being expunged. Worshiping God is being made illegal as quickly as anything else I've ever seen in history. We can't teach him in schools. We can't talk about him in public places. We can't even associate him with our law anymore. It's as though a systematic cleansing of any reference to deity is being wiped out of our society, and not just in a way to accommodate other religions, in a way to literally make the Christian ideal extinct. And those kinds of conditions, I guess, frighten me. Although I don't want somebody preaching some doctrine to my kids in school, it doesn't mean I don't want no reference to God in school. There's got to be some kind of relationship to the divine root of man. Otherwise, this kind of deception that you're talking about, that we're going to have to align ourselves against the coming enemy, and the very entity that's telling us to align ourselves against that entity is the enemy.
That's right.
So it seems as though the prophecy that in the last days, if it were possible, even the very elect would be deceived.
That's right, if it were possible.
Yes, but I think the very elect, if they really are the elect, won't be deceived.
Well, it's those who do not stand for something will fall for anything.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Wait, this interview has gone places I never thought it would go. However, it all ties together. You know, the fact that man is placed here on the earth by God in an intelligent, scientific way, and, you know, we're getting smart enough now, we can see the evidence of that science as we examine the human genome. We now know that the story that he revealed through his prophets is absolutely true, because we can read about it in the Bible and we can follow it right through the human genome. Yep, exactly right. Mankind is a created being, and DNA is a created molecule. We can now prove that scientifically and genetically. So all of that now makes more sense than ever. And then we have followed that all the way to the future, to the point where we are right now, trying to decide, okay, if we are engineered, designed beings placed here, given the capacity to grow and choose and create life in our own image, what's our responsibility with that?
Therein lies the rub.
Yeah.
That's where people get uncomfortable, is that there might be some responsibility involved.
Well, I frankly value that responsibility, and I try to transfer at least the knowledge of that responsibility to my kids. And I hope through this radio program we try to get that responsibility out there so that, you know, people realize that mortal life is absolutely tremendous. It's fun, it's painful, it's disappointing, it's inspiring, all at one time. But with that comes a responsibility to choose. Not just roll with the flow. We really have to choose what we're going to be. And that's what I hope the human race as a whole grasps. And maybe we can avoid wiping each other out again.
I've heard it said before that the best way to know the future is to create it yourself.
Oh, well said. Well, I believe everything we do eventually affects the universe, and I try to do that on purpose. I don't just sit around and wait to be affected. I try to make a positive change in the day, every day.
Well, I've really enjoyed the show, by the way.
Oh, I have too. And
you're a spectacular host.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, I might ask questions that go a little past people's imaginations, but we try not to get too insane or too opinionated about it. I'm a student, and I enjoy sitting behind the microphone and asking questions of the teachers, because I'm learning so much doing this, and hopefully the people that are listening around the world learn something too, and hopefully they get past their prejudices and they open up their minds, and maybe they'll open up their Bible again today or tomorrow and say, hey, you know, I remember this. The guys were talking about that. Really makes a lot of sense to me now. If I can get somebody to pick up a Bible tomorrow with this program, wow, that's an effect on the universe to be sure.
Well, in this world, if we want to know the truth, we really have to search for it.
Well, that's true, but truth in and of itself doesn't change. It's immovable, and whether we believe in it or not, it doesn't change the fact that it's still truth.
That's right. Once we find the truth, we have to accept what we found.
Right. You can't just say that it's false, because eventually you'll end up on the wrong side of this event called the rapture, which is a great translation, I guess, the way you describe it, a separation of a physical being from a physical world. Just taken up, I guess. Well, that brings us to the conclusion of tonight's program. I do want to thank my guest, Ken Parsons, for coming on. I am fascinated by his website, warzonewinner.com. Please go there, buy his DVDs, listen to them. You're going to learn a lot. And remember, Earth Explorers, who you are. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose every day. And remember, every life is immensely valuable. Reach out to the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you might have helped save the planet. Brooks Hager with X Squared Radio signing off. Good night, Ken.
Good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.